Okay, the Environment and Economic Development and Agriculture Division for Monday, March 10th will come to order. We're going to be hearing all bonding bills today. This is a bonding session, and how many did we hear last year? 130 bonding bills last year, I think we heard. So we've got another set of bonding bills. We're going to try it. We realize that everyone is very, very important to the people that are making the presentation as well as to the committee, but we do have a limited amount of time, so if everybody could try and keep their testimony to about 10 or 15 minutes at the max, we have quite a long schedule here, and we'd like to get through them all today if we possibly can. So is Senator Jensen here? Okay, you're up first then. I don't know how you drew the long straw, but... For those of you who are watching, legislators will be coming in and out, and we won't be taking any formal votes today because we'll be laying all these bills over for a recommendation to the Capital Investment Committee. And so don't be worried if you don't think that we're voting. But everybody here will be hearing these bills, and we'll get a better sense for them once we get over to the bonding committee. So, Senator Jensen, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill. I know you understand we have a short time, so I'll keep my comments brief, and then I'll turn it over to some of my testifiers so you get a better understanding of what we're talking about in Senate File 2007. It's a business development public infrastructure grant program. It's not new. It has been there for a while, and it has been utilized. What I'm suggesting with this bill is that we make it bigger and better. We need $25 million. That's what we're asking for in this program. And you'll hear a little bit about why that is necessary and something that we're asking for. This program is run through the Department of Deed. It's already set up, and I'll let Amanda Duer, talk a little bit about how the program currently works and some of the changes that we're suggesting.
All right. Yes, my name is Amanda Duer, and I'm representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. I'll tell you a little bit about the history of the Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant Program and the CGMC's request. The BDPI grant program is administered by Deed, and what it does is Greater Minnesota Cities and Counties can apply for up to 50% of the cost of a public infrastructure project needed to expand economic development, create or retain jobs, or increase the tax base. Examples of eligible infrastructure projects include sewers, water supply systems, utility extensions, streets, wastewater treatment systems, storm management systems, and industrial park development. The BDPI grant program has a record of success. Since it was first passed in 2003, 107 Greater Minnesota cities have received program grants to support 172 economic development projects. The programs help create 3,125 jobs and retain 4,052 jobs. This program also has a great return on investment. The $49.1 million appropriated by the legislature has leveraged more than $142 million in total investments. Senate File 2007 would provide $25 million for the BDPI grant program. The governor did include $5 million in his bonding recommendations. We are proposing an increased level of appropriation for two reasons. First, the program fund balance is nearly depleted. There are many projects out there for which cities would like to apply for BDPI funding. Second, in our bill, we're recommending to increase the maximum grant amount from $1 million to $2 million to assist cities with larger scale infrastructure projects. So the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities hopes that this committee will include the BDPI grant program in its recommendations to the Capital Investment Committee. It's a great way to directly support economic development in Greater Minnesota. And with me today, I have Steve Nasby, who's the city administrator of Windham, and he's going to talk about his experience using the BDPI program in the past and projects for which the city would like to use it in the future.
Thank you, Amanda. For the record, my name is Steve Nasby, City Administrator, City of Windham. I'd like to think that Windham is one of the successes for the BDPI project. We had gotten a 2012 award. Our award from BDPI was just short of $550,000. We matched that with some TED dollars that we got from MnDOT to do some work on Highway 71. And then the city also put about $1 million into the project. And what we did is we developed an 80-acre industrial park. That industrial park in north of Windham on Highway 71 had been kind of standstill since the city purchased the land in 2003-2004 because we couldn't quite find enough dollars to get the infrastructure in. And thankfully for BDPI and TED, we were able to do that and move that project forward. So in 2012, we got an award for BDPI TED monies, and then the city, like I said, city committed about $1 million to the project. We got going on our project, and not too many months after the award, a business in our area, Fast Distributing, came knocking on our door, and they purchased 22 acres out of our industrial park. They're looking to expand their manufacturing business. They make agricultural pull-behind sprayers. They're expanding their business. They're currently on a small property in rural, in between two cities, and so they're moving into our industrial park. They're currently building a 144,000 square foot facility, and that's phase one and phase two. They will be looking at additional phases in the future, but it's bringing approximately 100 jobs into our industrial park. We do have a couple of other businesses that are on various stages of implementation and purchasing ground. We have about 100,000 square foot warehouse that we're looking at, and then we have another 35,000 square foot manufacturing facility. So BDPI was just critically important to us to get those dollars into the community so we can get that industrial park completed. Our kind of future use may be for additional space. Like I said, we had about 80 acres in the initial park. We've sold 22 of that to Fast, and we've got another 15 to 20 under possibility for purchase. So our park's going to be half full within a year and a half of it opening. So we completed all the infrastructure work this fall. I think Senator Weber, I think, was out at the open house, and so it's a nice project. We'd like to say thank you to the BDAPI folks at Deed, Jeremy LaCroix, and we worked with Mr. Shands over at for the TED dollars at MnDOT, and that's just been a very successful project. So I'd like to, you know, ask you to continue to fund it, and a little more appropriation I know would go a long ways to helping a number of other communities in greater Minnesota and within the metro. So I guess if there's any questions, we'd entertain them.
Thank you, Mr. Nasby. I know my name is on this bill, and so it's probably a really good bill.
Yeah, I think so.
It's a really good bill, Mr. Chair.
We have a question. What does on line 1.19 through 1.12, what does that exactly mean? Does you know, Ms. Dewar, or does...
Let's grab one quick.
Oh, Mr. Chair, this is for if a business is a current business is expanding within a current park and they need to replace some of the infrastructure in order to support that expansion, so that it wouldn't have to be an entirely new development, but that if some of it needed to be replaced or improved to support that business.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, this is part of the making it better that we were trying to do with this bill, leveraging resources that communities have. A big problem is that there are some that need repair and replacement as well. So this would cover that challenging situation that our communities are faced with.
Okay. And if I may add to that, Senator, one of the improvements, I think, could also be installation of fiber optics. You've got a lot of parks in these places that have been developed pre-telecommunications, and I know in our park we were able to include it, but it's something that's very vitally important to the business that located into our park is that telecommunications, and so that these dollars could be used for that as an improvement to an existing park.
Okay,
that's correct.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and yes, when I seen your name on the bill, I knew it was a great bill. First question I have is, what I do like about it is Greater Minnesota Development, and maybe staff can help me. The asks have been all over the place over the years. We've got a copy of the actual grant awards here, or the amount appropriated. Is this unusual to be asking for this kind of dollars, or has it been more? Has it been less?
Mr. Chairman, members, it's kind of been in the 20, 25 million range. This session, the department is asking for $10 million. Governor has recommended $5 million for this program.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments or questions from the committee? Okay, Senator Jensen, any last comments?
Because well, I would just like...
Your 10 minutes is just about up.
Just about up.
You're doing a really nice job.
Well, and the $2 million, increasing it to $2 million in 2 years for our community is vitally important, too, just because of the amount of increase that it's costing to do these projects, which would then also indicate that we would need some more money in the total in the fund so that we can get more of these projects throughout the state.
Aging infrastructure is becoming a problem out there, that's for sure.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have any freezing problems down in your area?
Pipes, freezing problems?
Pipes freezing?
We do. We have some issues with pipes that are breaking because of the extreme cold this winter.
That's okay. We're getting a real lot of it up north. In fact, they're telling people to run their water all day long.
Sure.
Correct. They're doing that
city,
our way, too.
The city of Medford is doing that as well.
It's becoming a really big issue. Okay. With that, then, we'll lay Senate file number 2007 over for possible inclusion and recommendation to the bonding committee. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you,
Jensen.
Mr. Chair. And
thank
committee.
You, Senator.
Senator Wicklund, Senate file 1688.
Sure, yeah, thank you. It'll stay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'm glad to be here today to present Senate File 1688, which is a portion of, it's to fund a portion of the Minnesota Valley State Trail. This would provide $2.5 million for a 12-mile portion of this trail, which already exists from about Shakopee to the Belle Plaine area. It would connect Hennepin County trails to systems within the Dakota and Scott counties. It goes through the Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge, which is a noted area for wildlife and especially bird viewing. It would connect visitors to an area that is rich in our Minnesota history, and including Native American settlements, white settlements, and river navigation. It has a lot of support from different groups within Bloomington and Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge area. And I'd like to ask my testifier, who is here today, a resident and active resident and supporter of the trail system and the wildlife refuge, Ed Crozier, is here. And I'd like to have him present his testimony.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Crozier.
Chair, now representing Minnesota Valley State Trail Advocacy Group. For the Minnesota Valley
Nation. Mr. Crozier, can you move the microphone a little bit closer to your mouth?
The Wildlife Refuge has grown beyond our dreams in size, stature, and public appreciation. It is the nation's finest urban wildlife refuge, but it needs the state trail so more people can enjoy it. The Minnesota Valley State Trail was authorized by the legislature in 1967 and was incorporated in the Federal Minnesota Valley Wildlife Refuge Act of 1976. The existing Minnesota Valley State Trail is a natural surface trail from Belle Plaine to Chaska and paved from there to Shakopee. This year, the paved portion of the trail will be extended from Shakopee to the Bloomington Ferry Bridge, where it will stop unless bonding money is available to extend the trail through Bloomington. The 12-mile portion of the state trail through the city of Bloomington that has not been built is a critical missing link in the Metro Trail system. The users can now cross the river and in 2015 go north on the old historic Cedar Avenue Bridge. But there's no developed trail that allows hikers and bikers to go west along the river in Bloomington. Nor is there a trail going east to Fort Snelling State Park beyond the Minneapolis and St. Paul trails. Thus, the missing portion of the state trail in Bloomington is called the critical missing link. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources has a preliminary plan for this missing link trail. It will be a two-tread or dual trail with a single natural surface track providing for rugged mountain bike users and a 10-foot-wide hard surface trail for other users such as the disabled. The City of the Bloomington and the Wildlife Refuge own nearly all the land, and I have written endorsements of the trail from both of them. The Isaac Walt League chapter owns the largest privately owned parcel, and it supports the trail. The one other privately owned parcel is smaller, and the owner has been contacted by the Minnesota Valley Trust Incorporated, which has the money to purchase these tracks and has begun the appraisal process. Please appropriate the $2.5 million needed for DNR to build this trail.
Thank you, Mr. Corger. So if I understand this on the map here, the trails are done to here and to here, and we want to do the part in the middle so that we can eventually do the rest of them? Is that how it works?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct. That part is the missing component at this time.
But we're not all the way up to the Bloomington yet with the trails, are we, or are we?
The trail goes to Shakopee, and then they're paving it to the Bloomington Ferry Bridge, and there is where it stops.
Okay.
We want to continue it on to East Bloomington, 12 miles.
I got it. All right, any questions or comments from the committee? Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, just future costs to replace the trail or keep it up, are there plans to escrow or have some responsible parties, or would you be back in 20 years to have a new trail? Plans on those?
It would be part of the Minnesota DNR park system, parks and trails system, and I presume it would just be incorporated into their maintenance program. Not sure how I presume they come back every once in a while and ask for maintenance money.
So would, Mr. Chair, would any of that maintenance come out of the Metro Parks fund, or do you know, or maybe you don't know the answer to that?
Mr. Chair, I believe since it's part of the Minnesota State Trail, we have someone who can give a better answer. I'll let you respond.
Mr. Chairman, Kent Lacusmo, Director of Capital Investment for DNR. Within our asset preservation request are the funds to do trail rehab and maintenance. And our asset preservation request this year includes all types of asset preservation. And there's a definition in law that passed a couple of years ago for natural resources asset preservation. So that would include the trail rehab and maintenance, along with buildings and water control structures and all assets that the department owns.
Yeah, it's Minnesota. They fall apart just like everything else does. So. So they need maintenance.
Not the roads.
No. Oh, boy.
Both the Wildlife Refuge and the City of Bloomington would be using the trail, sometimes for maintenance purposes. So I wouldn't guarantee that they would contribute to the maintenance, but I think it's a good possibility.
So, and I assume that the other partners here that are endorsing this, do they have something into it also?
The two agencies, yes, they're providing all the land. There's no public acquisition except for two small tracks, and the Minnesota Valley Wildlife Refuge Trust has the money to purchase them, and they're appraising the properties and contacting the landowners. There's just two of them.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Okay, seeing none, then we'll lay over Senate File 1688 for possible inclusion and a recommendation of the bonding committee. Thank you, Senator Wicker.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Is Senator Wicker here?
Thank you.
Scott, we'll get another chair. Oh, okay. Is that true or not?
You need that, or you want it off?
Off would be preferred.
Can somebody turn that off? Maybe just the off button would be a good thing to do there. There we go. Senator Wicker, welcome to the committee. Senate File 17. Well, which one do you want first? 1752?
Yes, Mr. Chair. 1752 would be the preference.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, division members. Senate File 1752 addresses White Bear Lake and the need for addressing the augmentation of that lake. You've had a great deal of testimony in the past regarding the crisis in terms of the lake level. It's gone down 6 feet over the past decade. been a great deal of coverage. There's been studies addressing it. This moves the issue ahead in terms of further analysis, and we're going to have some testimony soon. Wouldn't it be nice if all the snow melting now could just go to White Bear Lake or other areas that need it? And I don't even know if that would address it. But this has been
a big haul program if you want. Maybe.
Okay. But we have had a number of groups in the White Bear Lake area and beyond addressing this in terms of conservation programs. The DNR has a program that, well, through the groundwater management, addressing conservation issues, the conservation district. There's many players involved. And I'd like to thank my colleague, Senator Chamberlain. This is a bipartisan effort. Senator Scalzi, in terms of community meetings, we appreciate your co-authorship as well. And the public is just saying, in a bipartisan way, can you get this done, but with a deliberate speed. The Chamber of Commerce has been at the forefront on this. And I, in the interest of time, I thought, well, with the two testifiers that could best give the status and the request for the need, which is unfolding further as we sit here, but the two persons from the chamber that have been so active would be Matt Kramer, the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce, the president, and Scott Mueller, president of the White Bear Lake Area Chamber. So, Mr. Chair, division members, if I could yield to my testifiers, and we'll open then for any questions.
Who wants to go first? Just say your name for the record, Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chair, members, good morning. My name is Matt Kramer. I'm president of the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for this opportunity to just give you a brief perspective. In Minnesota, we are conditioned to believe that water is a natural resource, and indeed it is. The challenge we have in White Bear Lake is that it's a depleted natural resource that, absent our intervention, will only grow to be further depleted. White Bear Lake, as you know, has an extraordinarily small watershed. It is not fed by any existing watershed of consequence. And what we've seen in the last 6 years, or 8 years, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair and members, is a number of studies that have demonstrated that groundwater pumping from surrounding communities as a function of growth, natural good growth, is in many respects accelerating the depletion. There is a solution. Lake augmentation provides for treated water free of zebra mussels to be used from surface water from the Mississippi River to refill White Bear Lake, do it in a manner that is cost conscious, but at the same time provide opportunities for further growth. If indeed communities in the East Metro choose to use surface water versus groundwater, the investment that we're proposing can actually be leveraged to build into potable water solutions in the future. Mr. Chairman, members, when we look at natural resources, we always ask ourselves, how do we best use this resource? And in the case of White Bear Lake, we are not managing a natural resource. I would finally draw your conclusion to why is the business community interested in this? The White Bear Lake is both a natural resource for area residents, but it is also an economic indicator for the East Metro. Many local businesses, including large manufacturers, use water for both a lubricant or a coolant in the manufacturing process. If we do nothing now, the existing lawsuit with the DNR and other measures might ultimately compromise the economic development capacity of the East Metro, putting us at a disadvantage compared to other parts of the Metro. Mr. Chair, what I'd like to do now is introduce Mr. Scott Mueller, who, as Senator Wieger noted, is very active in the White Bear Lake Chamber of Commerce, is also a local business owner and a White Bear Lake resident.
Thank you very much.
Are you running for anything in the fall or?
Me?
Yes.
No, I'm hoping to get back to working at my business. But when I'm not doing that,
I just want to make sure neither one of them were threatened.
No, none of us are running for anything. Okay. I can't speak for Senator Wieger, but in addition to that, I sat on the White Bear Lake Conservation District's Lake Level Resolution Committee for the last year and a half or so. In the past 2 years, the media that has been covering this issue has really helped change the discussion from a rich homeowners around the lake, where it really started out, change that discussion from that to making it more of a regional issue, which it really is. As a result of the USGS study, we see that the lake is unique in its geology and that the lake really becomes a tank almost for the aquifer below it. And because of that, when the aquifer depletes, it depletes the tank above it, which is White Bear Lake. This is definitely a regional issue. In the last year or so, we've spent a lot of time looking at the on the Lake Resolution Committee, looking at all of the possible solutions to remedy White Bear Lake. And the two that come up with the best short-term possibility are, number one, conservation, and number two, this augmentation effort. To speak to the conservation effort, the White Bear Area Chamber last year launched a substantial business conservation effort with some real tangible results. This year, starting in May, we're going to bring that to the residents as well, so that we're focusing on the conservation effort in addition to moving this issue along as it needs to, so that we can further augment the lake and bring it back to its former health.
Senator Chamberlain, did you want to get some press time here, or just sitting there for fun?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but not really. They've been working on this a long time, and as you know, last year the committee agreed to some money to begin studying this issue. Progress has been made. The citizens and the district and the chamber have all worked hard to. We continue to meet to come up with solutions that work, this is one of several solutions to getting that lake and the region back to where we need to be. But thank you.
Thank you. Is the language lake water augmentation system, is that clear to what it's supposed to be? And what is the plan? Is it for piping water from the Mississippi River, or what's the plan exactly?
Mr. Chair, members, indeed, lake augmentation simply refers to an existing technique that's used for several lakes, including two in the North Metro, Snail Lake and Gilliphant, where water from Mississippi River is part of the St. Paul drinking water system. It is actually piped out near Fridley, flows into a series of aquifers or aqueducts, and then ultimately is in four settling lakes in Vadnais Heights and in North Oaks. As it moves from lakes to lake, sediment drops out, phosphorus is removed, and then ultimately it's used for potable water here across the East Metro. This would simply be using tapping into that resource, filtering for zebra mussels or any other invasive species that the DNR would require, and then putting that water into White Bear Lake.
Okay. Senator Ingerson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, just a question. We have an appropriation blank here. Do we have any idea what kind of dollars? And maybe you already mentioned that. If you did, I apologize.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, we would like a few more days to perfect a number. I would yield to Mr. Kramer.
That's fine. Okay. You're still working on it.
Yes.
Thank you.
You got an idea?
Mr. Chair, we do. There's a preliminary engineering analysis that's been reviewed within an engineering company of approximately $22 million.
Is that what you'd be requesting here?
It's more than engineering.
That's engineering and construction to full implementation.
Okay. Is that the number you want to put in here, or do you want to wait?
Mr. Chair, I would suggest, as Senator Wieger noted, that we wait just a couple of days. We're finalizing these numbers, working with area partners, and there may be a little bit of fine-tuning, but I think it's going to be in that range, sir.
Okay. Is that the total you need from bonding plus whatever the local contribution is, or is that just total? That's the total project?
Mr. Chair, it's the total total project, so we need to do some work on establishing local partners.
Okay. All right. In that case, then we won't put a number in now. Okay, so then we'll lay over Senate File 1752 for possible inclusion and further information from Senator Wieger as to what the appropriation might be to recommend for the bonding committee. So thank you all very much.
Thank you.
And Senator Wieger, you have Senate File 1903.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and ask Ms. Dietrich to join me, and I believe we had another testifier.
Okay, Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Division Member, Senate File 1903 seeks funds for the acquisition of trust fund land by the Department of Natural Resources. As you know, the trust fund was established in our trust fund lands established in our Constitution, which predated statehood. And the legislature asked for an inventory to be done of the various lands which are primarily in northeast Minnesota. There's some 2.5 million acres. We actually had an update this morning in a report, a detailed report's available in terms of those lands. Approximately 444,000 acres, or nearly one-fifth of that land, is deemed non-productive. And given that there's a fiduciary duty of the Permanent School Trust Fund to get return for the school children, this is all about funds ultimately that go to schools from earnings, the recommendation would be that those non-productive lands be sold and through the DNR. And so I have some testifiers to briefly highlight the need for this, which is consistent with the statutory charge, and would ask to call first on Ms. Dietrich.
Ms. Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do we still have to call you representative, or does that follow you? Or?
Sure. It's fine.
Okay.
Thank
Welcome
you,
to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Denise Dietrich, and I am with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And I am happy to be here in support of Senate File 1903. This bill really represents the continuation of some work started in 2007 when Senator Wieger actually convened a group of interested people up north to learn about the school trust lands. He was chair of what we called then the Permanent School Advisory Committee, and I was the chair of a work group, the School Trust Lands Work Group. We went up there and we learned a lot about school trust lands. We learned a lot about the role of a trustee in regards to our school trust lands, and then it brings us to today's action, hopefully, is getting a bill passed that will do some of the things that Senator Wieger outlined. But by way of background, I would like to just go back a little ways and make sure that everybody is really clear on the understanding of why we are here. And it has to do with, as Senator Wieger said, going back to statehood. Upon statehood, the federal government granted land to states for the use of schools. These lands are known as school trust lands. In 1857, 100 years exactly before I was born, Minnesota accepted the school trust lands. And when they accepted school trust lands, they accepted the terms and conditions of that land grant. And at that time, they took on the role of trustee. If you have a trustee, you have beneficiaries. Who are the beneficiaries? Well, it's very clear that the beneficiaries are the public schools or the public or the school children of this state. And what many people do not realize, though, is that role of trustee extends to everyone who makes decisions on school trust lands. And so you, in your role as a legislator, when you make major decisions on the trust lands, you are acting as a trustee. And that information is from the legislative auditor himself. This framework began in the Enabling Act. It continues on into the Minnesota State Constitution. And in there, it creates what we call the Permanent School Fund. That is the actual fund, the corpus of the fund that keeps all the revenue generated off of the school trust lands. And we do have something to celebrate this in 2013, is our Permanent School Fund hit the $1 billion mark. When Senator Wieger and I first started working on this issue, the fund was about $650 million. And so we have made great progress, and it is amazing what a little bit of oversight and accountability can achieve for the children of the state. So
Where's the money coming from?
Your backyard.
Oh, okay. I just
Northeast Minnesota.
It's mostly mining money, though, is what it mostly is.
Timber.
Yeah.
So in addition to the Constitution directive, though, the Minnesota State Legislature has also passed a piece of legislation. And that piece of legislation makes it very clear that the goal of the permanent fund is to secure the maximum long-term economic return from the school trust lands consistent with the fiduciary responsibilities as established in the Constitution, with sound natural resource conservation and management principles and other statutes provided by law. So with that, the DNR manages the school trust lands, but case law in other states has demonstrated very clearly that the role, constraints and expectations of a trustee are not the same on school trust lands that if the state owned that land outright. That school trust lands are different than state-owned land, and they are to be handled differently. In fact, the same fiduciary principles that apply to the management of a private trust applies to the management of our school trust lands. One of the duties of a trustee is that they have to manage the assets with undivided loyalty. Another duty of a trustee is that they keep the trust lands separate. That the trustee cannot act on their own interest, and they have to manage the land in the best interest of the students or the beneficiary. In recent years, this line has been blurred. When there was less attention paid to this issue, what happened is many of the school trust lands were designated under the DNR as land that cannot generate revenue. Some of these designations are wildlife management areas, aquatic wildlife management areas, swampland, old growth, but they all have something in common. They are unable to generate revenue. But according to the legislative auditor and other case law, then the state is obligated to purchase those lands from the trust so that they may be held in trust and preserved into the future. And we agree with that. But the only way to get around that is to have then the state actually purchase the lands from this trust. It is their legal responsibility. In 2012, we passed a law that said that we should start buying out these lands. And so we are that is the reason for this bill, is to get the state on the path of buying out the lands. That legislation does say that it must be done by 2018, and there are some people that believe that the total cost of that could be upwards of $100 million. So if that is the case, we need to start now by purchasing some of those highly sensitive lands. And before I close, I would just like to make it known that some of the environmental groups and Minnesota School Boards Association and the Alliance, which is made up of PTA members, Parents United, C, AMSD, MREA, and MASA, have all bought off on this concept. And actually, the DNR did have this proposal as a part of their bonding proposal. And Aaron Vandalin is also here to speak to this issue if you would like to hear from him. I'll close my remarks.
Just the curiosity. So there's a whole bunch of unproductive land up in the boundary waters. And we've been trying to do a federal exchange so that we can turn it into productive land. Is the intent here also that particular land that is in the boundary waters to be addressed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Vandalin from the DNR has been working on that exchange continuously. While he's coming up to the table, there have been subgroups working on this since 2005, so I don't want anybody to think that this is just like a new idea. We have been working on that land exchange purchase since 2005.
Mr. Vandalin.
Mr. Chair, committee members, if I understood the question... Aaron Vandalin, School Trust Land Administrator, DNR. If I understood the question correctly, was whether or not any of these bonding dollars, if appropriated, would be used for the Boundary Waters Exchange, and no, they would not.
I don't know if I asked that. I asked if you're thinking about trying to make those lands into productive lands that are unproductive right now, and how we're going to, because it looks to me like what we're trying to do is have the DNR pay the school trust fund for lands that are unproductive right now, and it would seem to me that the lands in the boundary waters are not productive. So, and what we're trying to do is, we've been trying to do an exchange for a lot of years with the federal government, and I don't know how that's going. So I'm just wondering if you counted in your $100 million those particular lands that are up in the boundary waters, and I guess you said you didn't, so is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members, that is correct. When we went through the inventory process, we excluded the 86,000 acres of school trust land in the boundary waters. We did that from the inventory standpoint, simply because we are working with the Forest Service on a one-third, two-third exchange land sale proposal. We hope to have an actual land exchange project with the Forest Service here in the next month.
So. Is that what you want to say? Okay. All right. Thank you. Senator Wieger, you had another testifier. Dr.
Yes. Thank you. Mr. Chair, our final testifier is Dr. Steve Chaplin from the Nature Conservancy.
Dr. Chaplin, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Steve Chaplin. I'm a senior conservation scientist with the Nature Conservancy. The education and conservation communities have come together to support Senate File 1903, which will provide bonding funds to the DNR to protect key conservation areas on school trust lands. These are lands that are subject to the requirement that maximum long-term economic return, which could adversely impact or destroy their conservation values. Included in these lands are about 17,800 acres of old-growth forests, about 7,000 acres of native prairie, about 16,000 acres of other special or important natural communities of high or outstanding biodiversity significance. These include lands like fens, bogs, wet meadows, all of the natural community types that the Minnesota Biological Survey have been inventory for about the last 20 years. It also includes 51,000 acres of peatlands and 207 water access points. So these are important lands that are found, conservation lands that are found within the school trust estate. In 2012, the Minnesota legislature set the requirement that DNR compensate the permanent school trust lands for these lands that are under our designation or policy that prohibits their long-term return. And as Representative Dietrich mentioned, we only have until 2018 to actually accomplish that. The recent school trust biennial report estimates that the number was somewhere between $50 and $100 million that will be needed for the compensation. So what we're asking for in Senate File 1903 is to start the providing funds that are needed for compensation. So for the sake of Minnesota's old-growth forests, there's only about 4% of them left. For the sake of all of these other special places identified by the Minnesota Biological Surveys and other conservation lands that can't generate income, 15 of Minnesota's leading conservation organizations came together, and you have the letter from them in your packet, to support Senate File 1903 in your recommendations to the Senate Capital Investment Committee. So together we can create a win-win situation that not only protects the lands that should never be destroyed, but also provides permanent funding that will go toward educating Minnesota's school kids.
Okay. Thank you, Doctor. Senator Wieger, do we know a number for this one?
Mr. Chair, division members, as Ms. Dietrich pointed out, the longer term asked through 2018, per the statutory charge for this would take us to $100 million. And if there was some staging for paying for this, investing in the transfer, so it's what's available.
So do you want to put a number in?
$20 million.
Okay. Senator Saxhog moves that we on line 1.17 and on 1.15 that we put $20 million in the blank after the dollar sign. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion adopted. Okay. Any other comments? Senator Ingebretson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The attached document you talk about with the support on the back, also on there, and maybe this question would be better asked of Senator Saxhog, there's a bill there for approximately $10 million to be diverted to the school trust fund, which seems to make sense. However, that money goes generally into
the
money that's not claimed goes into the general fund. Is that correct?
That's correct, Senator. Mr. Chair, that's correct, Senator.
So Mr. Chair, Senator, would that be every year then that would until this $100 million is requirement is accomplished or at least part of that?
That would be the idea.
Okay. Any other comments?
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to acknowledge our colleagues on the committee that serve on this Permanent School Trust Group, Senator Weber, Senator Saxhog, Senator Rood, who chaired our, is chair. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Very good. Appreciate it. Thank you, Senator Wieger. So we'll lay over Senate File 1903 for possible inclusion to a recommendation to the bonding committee. We have Senator Bach on the list next, but we're going to take Senator Brown because he has a conflict, and so he promised he would be brief. So Senator Brown, with Senate File 1685. You're all by yourself?
I am by myself, Mr. Chair.
Are we waiting for someone? Or
the City of Ogilvie was not able to make it today to testify.
Right. Okay.
So thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Before us, I have Senate File 1685. This is a fairly simple bonding request for the City of Ogilvie. In March of 2009, their old school building burned to the ground. If you've ever driven Highway 23 between Malacca and Mora, you've driven by it and seen the eyesore that it is. The bonding request is for $400,000. The total work to get this site cleaned up and situated for redevelopment, my understanding, is about $1.2 million, so they aren't requesting the full amount, but the city would like to request this and to be able to help them to get this eyesore cleaned up and suitable for redevelopment.
Okay, that's a good question. So did they have any insurance proceeds to help with this, or is that the other part of the money that is not included here? Or do you know anything?
Does a
that?
Yes answer move this along?
Well,
I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, that's a better answer if you don't know. I've always said if you don't know the answer here, you're better off saying I don't know.
I do not know.
We can find it out later. Senator Ingram.
Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, does the cleanup consist of also some infrastructure, some new infrastructure for the site, or no?
My understanding it does, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. So did they build a new one? Or
what did they have a new school that's been built for years. This was being used as an antique mall. That business closed, and I think, I don't know if it was arson or what, but the school burned down 5 years ago, and it's been sitting there since.
All right.
Partially burned down.
Do you want to say something?
No.
Okay. All right. That was quick. You're right. I'm glad I let you in. Anything else? Any comments from the committee? Any questions? Okay. Seeing none, then Senator Brown will lay Senate File 1685 over for possible inclusion and recommendation to the bonding committee. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Brown. Senator Bach, I think you have three bills here in a row. Senator Bach? Senate File 1832, is that what we're doing first?
I believe, Mr. Chairman, we've got 1833 first, if we could.
1833. Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, this is a request for bonding to build a new sand and gravel storage facility in the city of Proctor. And you might ask yourself, well, why is that a state obligation? The city is being put in this position because of the MPCA. The current place that they're laying down there, where they have for years, their sand and salt, the MPCA has had growing concern over the seeping of that into a creek that ultimately runs in a very short distance in through the Minnesota Zoo and into Lake Superior. So the MPCA has kind of got them under the gun to relocate the facility. The city wouldn't be incurring this cost if the MPC wasn't putting it on them. So that's the reason we think this is worthy of state bonding. Mr. Chairman, I have one of my city councilors and city administrator here that can speak much more eloquently to the situation than I can.
Who wants to go first?
Senator Tomasoni, committee members, my name is Jake Benson. I'm a Proctor City Councilor, and I thank you for this opportunity to hear our very important bill, 1833. This bill has been unanimously approved and agreed to by our city council. We need this storage dome. We've been struggling to build one since 1997. This shed is our top priority because the city is not only losing salt and sand due to the water runoff, it is running into a DNR-designated trout stream. Since 1978, Proctor's been participating in the DNR trout stocking program in our Kingsbury Creek. and we would receive about 1,400 yearling brook trout a year to be put in there. And the brook, which is next to our Public Works Department salt and sand pile, flows through our regional recreation center into the Lake Superior Zoo in Duluth, which is 2 miles away as the stream flows, into St. Louis River and into Lake Superior. When Proctor needed to replace a culvert a few years ago over Kingsbury Creek, the DNR stated that it couldn't be just a culvert, it needed to be a trout habitat. So we wanted to make it compliant, so that cost for us went from $20,000 to $150,000 to have this trout habitat compliant culvert. The following year, the DNR ended its restocking program in Proctor, but the watery remains a DNR trout stream. Proctor's been spending, Proctor's only been levying about 1.5% a year on average during the past 3 years. We've certainly appreciated what we've been able to get from LGA. It's actually helped. But this small little $300,000 project is huge to us. And we are here to respectfully request that you add this very important priority of ours to your bonding priorities. We also have with us a Proctor resident, a former chamber president, a former mayor, and our current city administrator, Jim Rowiter.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
members
Rowiter,
of the committee.
Welcome to the committee.
My name is Jim Rowiter. I'm the city administrator. I think Mr. Benson has pretty much given you a quick overview as to what we're looking for from storage. I'd just like to make 2 points. One, the city is very interested in correcting this pollution problem that we have. We see it as something that we have a responsibility for, and we would love to correct it as soon as we can. Second thing is, we need your help to do this. We're only a 3-square-mile city with a little over 3,000 population. We just recently lost an annexation. We were trying to annex into one of the neighboring townships. We were denied, so it looks like Proctor is going to stay pretty much what it is. We don't really have a way to expanding our tax base. We have to try to use our dollars the best we can. In the past 2 years, we have put in a $6 million new road across town with all the infrastructure. We've had to buy new fire trucks, new front-end loaders, some new police vehicles. While this project's only $300,000, we're only asking for $150,000, which seems like nothing compared to what I've heard here this morning. It's a lot of money to the city of Proctor, and if we could just get that little bit of help, I think.
Sure, you don't want to ask for more?
That's all we could get is half. The city has funds to be able to pay the other half. We just would like to get a little bit of help so we can get this done right away.
Is this one of those huts that kind of goes up?
Salt Sand Dome.
Dome is the
City of Hermantown built one recently, and. Mm-hmm. 35.
Igloo type thing.
Pardon me?
An igloo type thing. Yeah, okay. All right. And you're doing this because you're being required to do it by the MPCA.
Well, they haven't. They sent us a letter back in 2009 saying they wanted us to correct this as soon as possible. They haven't come back and fined us or anything. We haven't if we didn't do it. But we just feel that now that we know about it, we're aware of it, we'd like to correct it.
Senator Rood.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bach, I'd like to add my support to this project. And, you know, I sit on the Great Lakes Commission, and one of the things that we've been working very hard on is the St. Louis area of concern. And so the fact that this brings pollution into that area, you know, we've had several meetings. We met in Duluth last summer, Washington, D.C. last week. And this is one of our big priorities is the St. Louis area of concern. And so the fact that this would really help to clean up that area, and we're working very hard on that area, I think that anything that we can do to help solve that problem would be of great benefit.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Real quickly, just the life expectancy of this dome, and it's going to be on the same site, correct?
Correct.
Okay. What is the life expectancy of them? I see these throughout the state of Minnesota. They seem like a pretty good project.
We're really checked in for sure, but
okay.
This is what everybody's using nowadays.
Right. Thank you.
Senator Westrom.
Chair, Senator Bach, and how many other cities do you think we might have in this kind of same fix with a state agency telling? Do we have any idea, or is this kind of unique just because of the Great Lakes up there?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if there are similar circumstances where they're sitting on the edge of a trout stream. That would probably, that and Lake Superior make them both pretty unique, I would think. But there may be others.
Sure. Thanks. Well,
this is an important project, obviously, but I want to point out that Proctor's suddenly become near and dear to me because my nephew is coaching one of the Pee Wee hockey teams. So I had to cheer for Proctor this year against Duluth East, and Proctor won, which is really a big deal. So, anyway, okay. Seeing no further discussion, go ahead, Senator Osmek.
Mr. Chair, to Senator Bach, there's a little place on Lake Minnetonka that also has almost exactly the same setup. I'm curious if you would be supportive. If Mound has a salt and sand facility that is leaching salt into Lake Minnetonka, if that's something that you would think that would be also appropriate for bonding.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess before I committed on that, I'd like to know what the state agencies, DNR and PCA, think if it's posing some environmental issue.
Yeah. Do you have freezing water pipes in Lake Minnetonka too? Or?
Oh, it's not just Lake Minnetonka. Oh,
okay. 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 Seeing no further discussion, we'll lay Senate File 1833 over for possible inclusion in a recommendation to the bonding bill. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Which one do you want to do next, Senator Bach?
Mr. Chairman, I believe Senate File 1832. And Mr. Chairman, as my testifiers come up, both of these bills for the City of Proctor were reviewed by the Senate Bonding Committee when they were doing their tour in the northeastern part of the state.
Okay. Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, my hope is that this building can also be of a multi-use regional-type facility. As you're aware, Mr. Chairman, the St. Louis County has two county fairs because it's such a large county. It's about 200,000 people, and it's in the neighborhood of 200 miles north to south. It's the third largest county east of the Mississippi, I believe, and the City of Proctor, in just a few years ago, actually took over ownership of the land, the St. Louis County Fairgrounds facility. So there is a significant function that draws people from a large area. This facility would not only benefit the City of Proctor, but all the people that visit those fairgrounds, and there's been a little conversation about the exact location of it, but my thought is for this to really be a regional facility, it needs to be in a place where people regionally can use it. So that's that I think is what helps make it a regional, and that it'll serve the entire fair during the time of the fair. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of my constituents here that would like to speak to the project.
Who wants to go first? Just say your name for the record.
My name is Glenn Gilderman. I am I'm a teacher at Proctor High School and also the girls' hockey coach for the combined team of Proctor and Hermantown. So I should have
held my comments on hockey until this one.
Yeah, they fit in perfectly. Okay. Fit in perfectly here.
Mr. Chairman, don't leave out Laverne now when you get there. Okay.
they were impressive this year. I didn't even know they had hockey in Laverne until I saw them.
They have girls hockey in Laverne, and they're pretty good there too. We were fortunate enough to represent Section 7A in the state hockey tournament a couple of weeks ago. And we took home the state consolation championship. So we're pretty proud. With me today, I have the Proctor Amateur Hockey Association president, Chris Bryant, and his son Jimmy, and then Sophie McGovern is behind me. She's a sophomore from Hermantown, and she actually was named to the all-tournament team at the state tournament.
Congratulations.
And then we have Kennedy Helverson, a freshman player.
Maybe they should be up here testifying.
They probably should be. They didn't want to do that, though. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, I think maybe we should give them an opportunity.
We still can let them do that, yes.
This project we have before you today is an arena and event center for the Proctor region. The Proctor School District, the City of Proctor, and the Proctor Amateur Hockey Association are partnered in this project. with dedicated contributions. The current facility is used almost exclusively for hockey because the operating expenses incurred by trying to keep it open at other times of the year make it not efficient to use when the weather warms. And I have on here, this may not seem like a great point this year until today, because spring is here today, I guess. I don't know if it's here in Proctor, but it's here. The facility safety has come into question with the movement of the cement floor. This movement causes great concern that it moves and the boards do not. This results in a spreading of the boards effect. Sadly, many of our boards are being held together with straps. The corner of the current rink where the Zamboni exits and enters has become dangerous because there are gaps between the ice and the doors. Every time a player goes into that area too quickly, I'm relieved when they come out without getting tangled in the boards. That corner is also known as a stick eater because sticks get caught in the gap and break. With the cost of sticks these days between $100 and $250, that corner has caused many parents to shed a tear or two.
And if you butt into yourself in the belly, it really hurts.
Yeah. Yes. I think we've all done that before. And it does hurt. On a serious note, we're genuinely concerned with everyone's safety. The Proctor Arena has become an unsafe place to play hockey. Temporary repairs have been instituted but are not sustainable. This is a 40-year-old building. It had a 30-year life expectancy. I actually played in the arena in the early 80s when it didn't have artificial ice, and a few years after that they added artificial ice. The arena also uses the refrigerant R22, which, as most of you probably know, is being phased out of use. The upper floor of the building where people can watch hockey in warmth is not handicap accessible, and the arena does not have a dedicated girls' locker room for our high school girls. I'd like to emphasize how proud I am of the Proctor community and the community as a whole for keeping the current facility up and running past its expiration date. The community has come together in many ways, from donating labor and materials, allowing our young girls and boys to the chance to play the great game of hockey. Chris Bryan has been a great leader in this area. Both my father and his were instrumental in creating a covered space to be able to play indoor hockey at Proctor. Another group came together to add artificial ice. The community is poised to act again, and we have been working on this for the past few years to get this new project started. It has been impressive to see everyone come together again. The money from this bond is a major part in making this dream come true for our community and other communities it will positively impact. The facility we want to build is going to be a multi-use facility, which hockey will benefit three districts, Proctor, Hermantown, and St. Louis County. Proctor and Hermantown share a girls' hockey team, and Proctor and St. Louis County will be sharing a boys' team due to a recent agreement. It will be serving the surrounding communities of Bayview Heights, Twig, Midway, Grand Lake, Solway, and Kenosha townships. It would also include a walking track for the community and a possible fitness center. This facility will be a place for the community to gather and use in many different ways. The benefit of this facility will reach beyond hockey. The economic impact is anticipated to be up to $2 million annually. Proctor is the gateway to the North Shore. It's a great place to host tournaments, but tournaments are getting tough to fill. The arena is in really bad shape. Teams that have attended this year and in past years were impressed with the organization of the tournament, but were disappointed with the facility. A new arena and event center would also positively impact the lodging industry in Proctor, Duluth, and Hermantown and Cloquet. The food and beverage industry would benefit from added tournaments and events at the facility. In the past, the Proctor community has done great things with state money. Two projects that come to mind would be the Proctor Area Community Center and the Proctor Regional Recreation Center. The PAC, as it is known, has become an important hub of the community and hosts endless community activities. Adding another community space would enhance the PAC and take some of the pressure off the limited space. The Arena and Event Center would be adjacent to another great project that was built in the early 80s with funds from the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Resources, the Proctor Regional Recreation Center. That was another important addition to our community that was jump-started with state funds. The community took it from there and built a first-class recreation center. This new arena and event center is crucial to the development of Proctor and the surrounding communities. Because the old arena will be retired, the new arena is welcomed by surrounding arenas. Members of the committee that have been working on this idea have been in contact with other arenas, including members of the Heritage Ice Arena Board in Duluth. They see a new Proctor Arena as a benefit to their facility. They anticipate hosting tournaments that will be large enough to use both arenas. At this time, I'd like to thank you for your time senators, and for and would like to invite you to ask questions of myself or Chris or Jimmy, Sophie, or Kennedy.
Chris, did you want to say something?
No. Not at this point, no.
You sure? Came pretty far. Girls, are you sure you don't want to say anything?
Mr. Chairman, let's give the Proctor Rails a chance to come up and testify to the legislature.
Right. Come on.
Just in case they're successful, we want to make sure that they've, if they're not successful, that they've got, at least gotten their word in.
Go ahead. Right. Come on up, girls.
And, Mr. Chairman, you'll notice the name is kind of interesting, their mascot, the Rails. Proctor is not considered in the taconite relief area, but virtually almost all the pellets that come off the Iron Range have always gone through Proctor. And the Canadian National Railroad has a very large rail yard there with sidings, so hence the name Rails for the strong emphasis on the railroad and the community. So a lot of retired railroad workers there, a lot of people there that still work for the railroad. So I'd like to have them a chance to speak to why this project's important to their community.
Who wants to go first? just say your name for the
record.
Well,
I'm Kennedy Halverson, and I've grown up playing in the arena, and knew every year there's been more and more problems, and we're just trying to keep up.
Did you ever lose your stick in that corner?
No, I haven't, but I've seen a lot of people that have. Well, at the beginning of the year, our team got locked inside of the locker room. So we ended up having to...
Was the coach mad at you? Is that why?
No, but we had to figure out that. And, yeah, I'm not really sure what else to say.
Just tell us your name and maybe the position you play and all that kind of stuff. Okay,
I'm Sophie McGovern, and... Other problems have been happening too is like we don't have a locker room for the girls, and we're like sitting, you know, getting ready, and all of a sudden like we feel like dripping, and we don't know, like we like all of a sudden we're all like kind of like wondering what's going on, but the ceiling is like dripping.
Yuck.
It's kind of gross and weird. And also like during the winter it's like super cold, like on the days where it's like -30 or -40. Like, we all get, like, come to the rink, and we have, like, hats and mittens, and, like, we wear sweatshirts and sweatpants underneath, like, all of our equipment, just so that we can, like, practice, which is, like, also a hassle. But
cold, cold.
Yeah.
That's how we grew up, but doesn't mean you should have to. Who's this guy?
My name is Jimmy Bryant, and... There are a lot of problems at the rink. There's countless times where the humidifier will go out and it's cold in the arena. The band doesn't even play at the high school games anymore because it's so freezing. Another problem that's slightly embarrassing is that the men's bathroom doesn't even have any stall doors. It's just the shower curtains. The boards are held up by straps, and one side the boards are slightly slanted. So there's a lot of problems that we have.
Well, we should condemn the place. When was that building put up? Do you guys know?
Well, I know that 1970-71.
It was natural ice, right?
It was natural ice.
Because I think it might have been Proctor. I was standing on the blue line and during the national anthem, and the ice was kind of tilted, and we ended up on the red line by the time the national anthem was done with. So I don't know if that was the place or not, but it was one of those down there somewhere.
So, Mr. Chair, that ice would not be conducive to curling then, would it, Just a comment. I haven't heard anything about nails sticking out, as did the boards in Indus, and you probably played there as well as I did, but you had to be careful going along the boards. That was an outdoor rink, but thank you very much for coming to testify.
Well, did you ever play in Kinney?
Piney.
Kenny, because Kenny, we never beat Kenny because they had the only peewees that shaved, and so we win when we were there. But anyway,
versus you guys that didn't shave then. That's
right. So, okay. Any other comments for anybody? Senator Bach, we got several of these kind of requests up north, and maybe we have to bundle them all together into one big request. It might not be a bad idea, Senator Scoy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and you bring up a thought that I just had. I know that there used to be that Mighty Ducks bonding proposal that would go to all hockey arenas across the state, and I did hear these people talk about the change of over from the refrigerant types.
That's really cool.
And I do know that there's an issue for all of the arenas across, or many of the arenas across the north.
There's something like 140, I think, in the state. And we're trying to get some Mighty Ducks money for that. That. So this would fit in nicely. Yep. Senator Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just want to caution them. They might be giving up some home field advantage if we get them a newer rink.
If we get it, make it too nice.
Thank you for coming.
Teams that come up from the cities, they come in and start complaining right away. Immediately.
Oh, really?
Okay, thank you all very much. I appreciate you. One more comment. Go,
if
Chris.
I could just comment one.
Just say your name, Chris. Say your name.
I, too, was
Just say your name for the record.
Chris Bryant. Okay. I'm currently now the president of the Proctor Amateur Hockey Association. I, too, came through the program, started when I was 4 years old. This building that we're in was originally built not to be a hockey rink, but it was a horse arena. And for many years, we had horses in there in the summertime, and it was a dirt floor. And then in the summertime, we would get things ready, and we would flood over it. So over the years, we've involved. We've got a lot of people that have been committed to the program. We got artificial ice in the late 80s. Which I was a part of being able to play in. So back in my day, we couldn't, as a high school, we had to go elsewhere to practice early in the season. We would practice late at night or early in the morning. But we've made many improvements over the years, but it's just an old facility, basically sitting on a swamp. And there's great safety concerns. We've had high school games stopped because of the problems with our boards, with the slab coming up, the boards want to go out. And one year we had a kid get checked into the boards, and his arm went through the space in between the glass and got hung up there. So we've done a good job of putting Band-Aids on the rink to keep it open, but it's getting more and more difficult to make those Band-Aids stick.
Okay, any other comments from this hockey-oriented committee here? So, seeing none, then. Thank you all for coming. I really appreciated your trip down here and see what we can do.
Thank you.
We'll lay over Senate File 1832 for possible inclusion and recommendation to the bonding committee. So, thank you. Nice job. That wasn't that hard, was it? Senator Bach, Senate File 1852.
Nothing quite like putting a face on a project, is there,
right,
Mr. Chairman?
That's right.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, this bill is something that I think this committee is probably familiar with. For a long, long time, Lutzen Mountains, in fact, since it started, drew their water to make snow on the ski hill out of the Poplar River. And there became increasing concern about the volume of water that was being taken out of the Poplar River, and they operated for years with an expired DNR water appropriations permit. And 2 years ago, we were successful in getting some money in the bonding bill to actually build a water line from Lake Superior up through the golf course to feed the golf course, to make a potable water supply for all of the development up at Lutzen Mountains, and to provide water for snowmaking purposes. And based on the engineer's estimate, we thought we had enough money to accomplish all that. There was a lot of support for that project. But when the bids came in, it came in significantly over budget. So we're not able to complete the project as we all had it, envisioned it to be. So we're here today, Mr. Chairman, with the second piece to make sure we can complete the project that the legislature thought they completed 2 years ago. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I have some witnesses here to testify.
Who wants to go first? Just say your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Charles Skinner. I am chair of the Lake Superior Poplar River Water District. I would like to thank Senator Bach for his ongoing support of this project. You have a handout in your packet with background information, including a map of the water district itself. Funding sources include a deed grant, as Senator Bach mentioned, for $3.6 million. Local funds of $1.3 million have been contributed to date to the project. However, the total cost is $6 million, leaving a deficit of $1.1 million. Project partners include the Cook County Grammaray EDA, IRRRB, Lutzen Mountains, and the Superior National Golf Course, as well as Caribou Highlands. The pipeline is a little over 2 miles long, runs from Lake Superior to the ski area through the golf course. There's one pump house down by Lake Superior. The project provides water for irrigation of Superior National, potable water for Caribou Highlands, as well as a firefighting water hydrant to be located by Highway 61, which will be available for filling tankers for state, federal, and local firefighters. There's no other similar water hydrant in the entire west side of the county. As Senator Bach indicated, the project is complicated, it's unique, and construction is highly specialized. Like many construction projects on the North Shore, difficult construction conditions related to rocks and wetland impacts limits construction options and increases cost. The pipeline inlet extends 300 feet into Lake Superior. The final design was more expensive and complex than first anticipated, fully taking into account Lake Superior wave forces, which, as you know, can be really huge, and the amount of rock required to be removed. The inlet construction required a specialized contractor working from a barge and tugboat and including underwater blasting and divers. There's only one qualified marine contractor in the region that can do that work. The pumps for the project are unusual because of the length and elevation of the pipeline. Higher horsepower was required compared to traditional municipal water plant. The main pump house is at the bottom of a cliff, making construction much more difficult and increasing costs. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members, and Senator Bach for your consideration of this project. I also have with me Jim Boyd, Executive Director of the Cook County Chamber of Commerce.
Mr. Boyd, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, committee members, as Charles said, my name is Jim Boyd. I'm Executive Director of the Cook County Chamber of Commerce. You have my letter. I commend it to you for its scintillating prose, which I saw Senator Saxhog enjoying just a minute ago. I just wanted to make a couple points. This is a really big deal for us. We're a small county, at least in population, 92% state and federal owned, 8% we live on. When the population of St. Louis County was mentioned, I was calculating we're 1/40. We have 5,200 people. Economically, we struggle. We know we're working very hard to do all that we can. It's only a slight exaggeration to say that in the wintertime, Lutzen Mountains is our economy. This project is vital to our economic success going forward, and we very much appreciate what you've done so far and hope you can help us get the rest of the way.
So have we started the project with the $4.9 million?
Mr. Chair, yes, the project has been started. We were concerned that if we did not start it, costs would go up. So the project has started.
And are we in the water, or we're not in the water yet, or
we're not in the water. We started late this fall, but we've started with some of the work down by the pump house and the pump house itself, but the inlet is not installed yet.
Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a mechanics question. Do you pump this water into a holding tank halfway through there, or at least partially away, or is this the only time there's a need, the pump is automatically goes on? To try and understand it a little bit.
Mr. Chair, Senator, The pipe will be charged at all times. It is not, there's no holding ponds.
Mr. Chair, so it's running constantly then, is that, to keep that pressure there?
There's a pressure there, but it's not running at full force. It was required to be charged at all times to comply with drinking water, and it's just the way it needed to be designed.
Yeah, we figure we got enough water in Lake Superior to do this. So.
Oh, I think, yeah. I just don't understand, Mr. Chair, the mechanics of drawing water that far and having that need. If you need it for fire, if you need it for making snow, I would, you know, it would seem, yeah, I don't know anything about it.
Senator Scott.
Irrigation type system.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Much experience on this.
Well, I think, Senator Ingerman's, what they would do in order to charge the line is, it's a three-phase motor, and a three-phase motor, you can turn at different RPMs. It's called a phase inverter. And they would slow the RPMs down to keep charge on the line. And then when they need more water, the pump would spool up and pump at a faster RPMs.
Thank you.
See, and you just thought we were senators.
Right.
Any other comments from the committee? Senator Bach, any final comments?
No, Mr. Chairman, except to say that Mr. Boyd is right. I mean, Lutzen Mountains is the big gorilla of Cook County's economy, especially during the winter months. And we were at huge risk with them with an expired water appropriations permit from DNR that they weren't going to be able to operate. They were the very first ski hill in Minnesota in 1948. And I actually had the opportunity last fall to meet Mr. Nelson, who originally started the ski hill, and he told an incredible story about when he was in World War II, sitting in a foxhole in France, I believe he said, and his grandfather had owned Lutzen Resort. Lutzen Resort down on the shore of the lake has been there about 130 years probably, so he grew up around Lutzen Resort, but there was no ski hill. And he said he was sitting in a fox hill in France, and he told his buddy, if I ever get to go home, I'm going to start a ski hill at my grandpa's resort. And that was where the dream was born. And it was the very first ski hill in Minnesota that started up the hill from where the lodge, the Lutzen Resort Lodge, is right now. It's quite a story. He's a remarkable guy.
Well, that took us back. Didn't know that history. How did they get the water up then?
Took it out of the Poplar River. Mr. Chairman, it wasn't a trout stream until the 70s, I believe.
Was that was another designation by government that screwed things up, or what?
Department of Natural Resources.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you all very much, and thanks for coming down. So we'll lay over Senate File 1852 for possible inclusion in the recommendation to the bonding committee. Thank you very much. Senator Senjum, Senate File 1871. Senator Senjum, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1871, which you're hearing at this moment, is all about something called the Stagecoach Trail. It's something that's been around, I think, since around 2005. As I first got into the legislature and realized that we've got the potential trail jewel down in my area, we started working on that, and it's been diligently worked on for some number of years. And on one occasion, Senator Langsett put $500,000 towards this project, and that's continued to be used as well. But we're at the point now, members, where this is, getting ready to happen. And as any of you have been involved in trail projects, they take a long time to mature, land acquisition, discussions, routes and so on and so forth. So this
Senator,
is
Senator
taken
so,
a while.
So that stagecoach ride cost us $500,000 to Senator Langston?
Oh, you remember the stagecoach?
Oh, yeah.
No, that was, no? I think, Wells Fargo.
That was okay.
Do you remember? Were you the one in jail?
No, I was not.
All right.
No, but I'm pretty sure Langston was on the stagecoach, if I'm not mistaken.
I think he was.
Well, good point, you remember. In any event, for members, this trail goes from, basically, I'll just say round numbers or round places, Rochester to Owatonna. It's 40 miles. It encompasses places like the Oxbow Zoo, the park, camping, et cetera, which is in Olmsted County Park. It goes then west on into Manorville, which I'm not sure if you've been to Manorville or not, but I'll just describe it as a pioneer historic sort of community, a city steeped with all kinds of tradition and shops and neat places to go. From there, it would go along the Zumbro River west to a place called Wasioja, which at one point was bigger than Rochester, 6,000 people, the home of a seminary over there, very important historically from the standpoint of Civil War history. The first the only recruiting station, as far as I know, west of the Mississippi for the Civil War, remains in this little community of Wasioja. Continuing this, then to Dodge Center along the Zumbro River and to Rice Lake State Park near Claremont, and then on into Owatonna. So it's got a lot of attributes, and if and when built, I think it will, a little biased here, but probably at least in our neck of the woods, rival the Root River Trail down in Lanesboro, which is so exceedingly popular every weekend, virtually every year. So that's just sort of an overview. I'd like to just turn to my witnesses here so we move this along. Jane Olive is very involved in the trail program within Dodge County, has been for years, and Mayor Chuck Bradford of Manorville. I think Jane's going to start.
Yes, thank you very much for asking us to come today. You have before you the map that is the search corridor for the Stagecoach Trail. The area that
just say your name for the record. So
Jane Olive.
Okay, go ahead.
Just like it sounds, Olive.
We just got to get it on the record. We don't care what it sounds like.
Like an olive tree.
Tree, we got it. Okay.
A branch. Stuff. The segments that we are discussing today are segments 1, 2, and 3, primarily from Rochester, emphasizing the 2 and 3 from the from Byron just into the segment 1 up to Wasioja. The county, like Senator Senjum was saying, is that Dodge County is between Steele and Olmsted counties. It was one of the earliest settled counties in southern Minnesota and continues to be a very active in the historical areas. But the main industry in Dodge County is agriculture and ag-related businesses. But many of the citizens that live and play in Dodge County work in Rochester and in Owatonna and are very interested. They, as well as people that live within and work within the county, are very interested in having this trail come through. Countless thousands of hours have been spent by volunteers planning, dreaming the Stagecoach Trail, coming up and talking to you. You've seen us up here at any number of times in our costumes. We almost did today, but we decided not to. It was just too sloppy to go out there. It wouldn't have been any big deal for Chuck, but the bottoms of my skirts would have been really bad. So but thousands of hours have gone into planning and deciding. The monies that have come to us so far, some of it has been used to do some initial surveying. We had one area that we thought was going to be beautiful that we couldn't do geographically. It just was not feasible. So we had to go back to the drawing board. Again, nearly 100% volunteer hours have gone into this. And the state legislature actually thought it was the Stagecoach Trail was a pretty good idea, too, because it was enacted into law in 1997, as it says in our little brochure here. The Stagecoach Trail Master Plan finally came out in March of 2012 and actually delineates all of the areas there would be in the positives and where they stand in the geographics and many of the specifics. This was our go-ahead with being able to start buying land. We really couldn't start buying land until we had initial surveys that our say we can go ahead with it. And then the DNR takes over from there, and with their master plan, they can start making the purchases. We are nearly ready to start purchasing some land up and around the Wasioja area coming back toward Mancherville. So we're moving ahead very swiftly, and considering swiftly doesn't mean in a short period of time. It means that this is still a lot of work to do. But we have very good partners in our DNR and our DNR reps with the Parks and Trails. And I'll give it over to Chuck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jane.
Mayor?
Thank you also, Chairman, Senator Senjum, and committee members. My name is Chuck Bradford. I am the mayor of City of Manorville. And as both the Manorville Economic Authority Association commissioner, as well as the City of Manorville, I am often asked to identify and evaluate projects based on their safety concerns as well as financial impacts. I wanted to share with you some of the reasons today why I am in support of this project, and I feel that it would be a good project for your support as well. Manorville is a small town that has a very active and strong volunteer community. This volunteer community is what started the Dodge County Trails Association. Much of the effort that has been achieved with the Sunrise, Sunset, and future Stagecoach Trails has been due to the participation of our volunteers within our community. This project will also benefit from this large resource of volunteers and enables this project to achieve with limited financial resources that which other projects would have to spend considerable resources to achieve. The existing Sunrise and Sunset Trails serve the Manorville area well, but the existing trail infrastructure do not bring people into the heart of the city of Manorville. Manorville has a rich cultural heritage and active tourism industry. The Stagecoach Trail will link the heart of the city to existing trail infrastructure and bring increased pedestrian traffic into our community. The Stagecoach Trail will provide a safe pathway between the existing infrastructure, the city of Manorville, the Casson Manorville High School, and the surrounding community. However, the existing trails do not provide a safe pathway across our river. This new project will address that need. The Dodge County Trails Association today is asking for $3 million for phase one of a three-phase project. The first phase is to acquire and build the actual trail surface for phase one. As part of the Manorville EDA strategic plan, the Stagecoach Trail is an important consideration to how the community is planning to move forward. With support by resolution by both the EDA and City Council, as well as financial commitments, the community is heavily invested in the success of this trail. The return on investment, safety aspects, and the ability to maintain Minnesota tourism dollars in the city of Manorville and the region are just a few of the reasons that this trail has my full support, and I ask that you support this project as well. Thank you again for your time and consideration. I'll turn it over for questions and answer.
Thank you, Mayor. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Olive, you may have testified, or maybe Senator Senjum, about this particular phase is from Byron to, and I'm not going to try the name.
Wasioja.
Just like it's spelled. 1, 2, and 3.
Yes.
On your handout, it says all phases approximately 10 million phase. This is phase one, or does it include all phase one and two
phase
and three?
Phase one, those are segments.
Okay.
And so the segments are 1, 2, and 3. That's how it's delineated in the master plan here. And so just to make it more clear, just to let you know that phase one is that 1, 2, and 3 segment.
And a follow-up question, Mr. Chair, if I could. Are these acquisitions or are they going to be some right-of-way plans for trails?
Yes.
All acquisitions or county right-of-way?
Road
right-of-way, I'm sorry.
I'm not positive about that. We're looking at another spot going east, and I'm thinking that's all private, but I can't bank on it right now. I don't know.
That's a good segue. Senator Ingebretson, and Mr. Knopf has a concern about the way the language is written here. We may have to do a little wordsmithing. So, Mr. Knopf,
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering, in looking at the bill, it says for a grant to Dodge County to acquire and design and construct the Stagecoach State Trail. Generally, the money goes to DNR to do those activities.
Yes, it does.
In fact, if you look at where this is set up in statute, it says the Commissioner of Natural Resources shall establish, develop, maintain, and operate the trails designated in this section. So
suggestion?
Well, Mr. Chair, generally for state trails, you would just eliminate everything after resources on 1.7 and delete everything before 2 on 1.8. So it would read to the Department, to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to pre-design, design, and construct phase 1. That's the general process we would use, is have the DNR do all of those things and not necessarily as a grant to the county to do it.
Right. And that's where the $500,000 was sitting in the DNR coffers. That's where.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, that's certainly okay with the author if there's a member that wants to orally provide that amendment.
Would you move that?
I certainly would, Mr. Chair, if I could, just to explain the reason why I asked that question, because there's a lot of trails, obviously, and we've been doing a lot of them, and some of them do have actually access to county roads, but this one apparently not. So that was the only reason I asked it. But if that helps it clear up and the author's fine, I would offer that as an amendment.
Sure.
So after resources, we delete?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, on line 1.7, delete everything after resources. On line 1.8, delete everything before 2.
Okay. Senator Ingebretson makes that motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion adopted. Okay. Any questions or comments from the committee? Okay. Well, thank you all very much. I appreciate your
questions. Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I should have explained this, and it's probably not important, but it is maybe to me. This is Stagecoach Trail. It mimics, or at least tends to try to follow the Stagecoach as it did in one point in time between Winona and St. Peter. So it's an historic route for our community and for our area, and moreover, it's a beautiful route with a lot of beautiful features, and you know, hopefully at some point in time we'll have this done.
So how often do you bring out the Stagecoach, actually?
Well, we don't have a Stagecoach. Funny you should say that. At the end of the last weekend in June, we will be having Mantraville Stagecoach Days, and we have been working with two different companies, and we hope to be able to have a Stagecoach there.
Because there was definitely one there the last time I was
down there. Oh, yes, there was, and I remember that very well. That was fun.
Senator Thomasoni, if you want to bring the committee down, I think we can find the Stagecoach.
I think we'll find a Stagecoach for you.
And the jail also.
Yeah, jail. That was the problem.
And we do have the jail, and it's all warmed up and it's been painted recently.
Senator Ingebretson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Senator St. John, is this a trail that you're going to be jogging on?
Oh, gosh.
This is being recorded.
Mr. Chair, if I just may add one additional comment to your question about right-of-way and how we're planning to move ahead. We currently have several private landowners that have signed on to agree to simply donate right away across their land. This indicates the level of community support that we have. Our focus is to achieve as much private land, either through acquisitions or donations, as possible, and limit the use of any public lands simply because of the geography of the area and the scenery that's available in our area, to make that a more aesthetically pleasing trail. So I wanted to add that a little bit, and thank you again for your time and consideration.
Okay, thank you for coming up to the Capitol and present this. We'll lay over Senate File 1871 for possible inclusion and recommendation to the bond. Senator Chamberlain, are you here? Senate File 1712.
Still here, Mr. Chair.
All right. That's more than I can say for some of my committee members. I know. This side of the table has been really good.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for allowing us to present this bill to you. This is a continuation, as I said earlier, of an effort that began last year with appropriating money for a study, finishing up a study of White Bear Lake area, as well as the aquifer in the region in Northeast Metro. So we have water, we have plenty of water, but it's about properly managing that water. And what you'll hear today from City Administrator Brian Baer and City Engineer Jay Kennedy from Hugo is something that's smart, it's responsible, and it's very timely. It ties into the White Bear issue, the groundwater issue, the aquifer issue, and it will help to, as a responsible way to address it, one way that some of these cities are approaching the problem. So they're asking, in short, for $3 million for a project to create some stormwater reuse and reduce the burden on the aquifer. And in addition to that, they will be losing. They're going to give up $3 million in revenue because once this project is in, the city won't be supplying the water, and they won't be getting the revenue for that. So with that, I'd like I don't know which gentleman would like to go first. Mr. Baer will go first, and he'll briefly go over what they're looking at. You have a handout in front of you, and that'll briefly explain it. Pretty straightforward. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Just state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brian Baer. I'm the city administrator for the city of Hugo. We were listening closely. We had a good lead-in conversation to this discussion with the White Bear Lake Group and the augmentation issue that you discussed earlier. That was relevant in probably a couple of different ways. One is that it illustrates the importance of the water issue in the Northeast Metro. Hugo, we think, has a project that makes a lot of sense in that context right now. It also illustrates that Hugo is the growing community that is always referred to when this problem is discussed on the water levels of White Bear Lake. It's always a discussion about growth that's happening nearby. Hugo is the city immediately north of White Bear Lake that is experiencing that rapid growth. Despite that, we think that our community has done a remarkable job in being good stewards of the resource. We take the discussion very seriously, and we think that the efforts that we've done so far and will continue to do have propped us up as really a leader in the water conservation, water reuse, and responsible water management really within the whole region. So what our city council has asked us to do, they've directed us to develop a strategy when it comes to water management in the city of Hugo. They want us to reduce the pumping that we do from the aquifer by as much as absolutely feasible. So if there's ways to reduce groundwater pumping to our municipal system, we've been finding ways to do that. Secondly, we want to reuse water as many times as we can. Not only do we want to reuse water over and over again, but we want to think about recycling stormwater. So if there's a way that we can use our stormwater without letting it drain out of the city, we want to capture stormwater runoff and put it to a good, viable use. And then finally is replenish the aquifer. Along with that development comes very responsible development practices that allow us to put water back into the ground. And in most cases, we can put more into the ground than what is naturally occurring before development. So those are the kinds of things that we're working on in the city of Hugo. It is reduce, reuse, and replenish. We've been a leader in this conversation regionally. I sit on the DNR's Groundwater Management Area Advisory Team. We have a council member that sits on the Met Council's Water Supply Advisory Committee. And so this is a significant area of discussion for us. We have just implemented a very significant project that does those three things I just talked about by converting a groundwater-based irrigation system within a major golf course in the city of Hugo to a stormwater-based system that reduces pumping from the aquifer. It uses stormwater, and it replenishes a significant amount of water back into the ground. So that is a lead-in, and I'd like our city engineer, Jay Kennedy, to walk through the specific project for you. You should have a handout that's 3 or 4 pages long that he'll walk through with you.
Thank you, Brian. Again, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, my name is Jay Kennedy, and I'm the city engineer for the city of Hugo, and thank you for the opportunity today. Brian mentioned the Onika Ridge Golf Course project, which we expect to be online this spring. Today is at least some indication that that will occur, and I'm very pleased to see that happening. Just by way of volumes, Onika Ridge Golf Course uses about 30 to 40 million gallons of water per year on their irrigation system. That's with their own private well. And so by converting the system as we expect in the spring, that water will no longer be pulled out of the aquifer. It's the same aquifer that we're all sharing for our drinking water. So that's a significant project in our community.
When you say we're all sharing, are you talking about White Bear?
Mr. Chair, yes, I am. The Prairie du Chien Aquifer is the aquifer that gets talked about a lot. If you've seen that in the news, that is the aquifer that the communities in the Northeast Metro area draw
their water from. Does the augmentation method that they're using benefit you?
I'm sorry.
About augmenting the level of the water, I think, at White Bear Lake. Does that help you?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, in terms of the augmentation of White Bear Lake, I believe that by augmenting the lake, there would be some groundwater recharge benefits as well as simply filling the lake up, because as was mentioned earlier, that, you know, the water in White Bear Lake does drain down into the aquifer eventually. But it does not help us directly.
Letterman throws his pencil like that.
It was actually only the cap.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Just a little bit about the City of Hugo's water usage, and this is a good example of what we see in many communities, particularly the suburban communities. The City of Hugo pumps about 425 million gallons each year out of the Prairie du Chien Aquifer to distribute to our water customers. Of that amount, we have about half of that gets used for your typical domestic usage, commercial usage, things of that nature. The other approximately half gets used for irrigation, and we have a pretty easy way to estimate that. And so we've done that over the course of time, and that's what we've found. This mirrors many other communities. Irrigation is a big part of water usage. So of that half, okay, now and there's a pie chart in the handouts. Hopefully it's helpful. But of that half that's irrigated, half of that is going through a typical house. So the water might come in through your meter at your house or at your commercial business, and then it gets used to irrigate. The other half of that, or about a quarter of our annual water usage, is through accounts that we call irrigation only. And so those are accounts where the only use is irrigation. An example of that might be a common area at a townhome association, for instance. The only need for that water is just to water their common landscape area. And so as you can imagine, that is a big part of what we provide as a water utility. And so by analyzing that, we've found a way where we can reduce that. The one thing we have in the City of Hugo as a benefit is that we do have quite a bit of water in terms of stormwater. Approximately 4 times as much water runs off in our city as we pump out of the aquifer. And so we're able to, because of that fact, capture that stormwater and use it and reuse it as we are proposing. So a couple things that the city's done. In 2011, we looked citywide at a plan for water reuse and developed a number of projects where this type of thing could be accomplished. We have selected 3 projects that are included as part of of our request, where we can reduce the groundwater pumping by 50 to 60 million gallons on an annual basis if we can implement these projects. They're shown on a map that I've included in your packet. I'll refer to the Water's Edge development here in just a minute, but also the Beaver Ponds development and then some city irrigation for some of our landscapes along a county road entering into our community. So what we did first is take a look at, okay, we got to make sure we've got enough water and that it's close enough to some of these subdivisions. So the Water's Edge subdivision is the example we have before you, but there are a couple other projects. We've taken a look at and analyzed the rainfall data, et cetera, and there is enough water that can be collected right within the subdivision that we can capture and pump and use to irrigate the common spaces and then take those systems off of our potable water. We mentioned the Onika Ridge Golf Course at 32 million gallons. Here again, we're talking about 50 to 60 million gallons of water on an annual basis, or roughly a quarter or so of our, or just under a quarter of our annual water usage. So in summary, as we take a look at these projects from the city's standpoint, Brian talked about reduce, reuse, and replenish. And what we see here with these projects is the ability to reduce our groundwater pumping by 50 to 60 million gallons on an annual basis and reuse that 50 to 60 million gallons to water common spaces, at which serves to do two things. One is replenish the aquifer through infiltration. But secondly, and as I guess just as an added benefit, that infiltration allows for the removal of phosphorus from the water. So instead of that stormwater running downstream with the phosphorus, which creates algae, that's something that our watershed district and the DNR and several other agencies are promoting, is the removal of phosphorus. We're able to remove up to 800 pounds annually by irrigating with that water instead of letting it run downstream. By reducing our use of the aquifer, and reducing our pumping, we can add 800 homes in our community and still be at that 425 million gallon annual pumping. So instead of having to pump even more water, we can grow and keep our water usage the same. And then it was mentioned earlier, 3 million in lost revenue, which does represent about 15 to 20% of our annual revenue in our water fund. And so we would expect to have to raise our rates in order to keep the fund viable, and that is an economic development concern for us. We want to remain competitive in providing clean water in our region, and so that is very important to us as well. And lastly, we believe that this project can serve as a model for others. We are at, we believe, at the forefront of this type of solution, and by implementing these projects, we can create a model for other communities to follow.
Senator Scalzi.
Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for the presentation. I think with all the water meetings that we've been holding and we're looking at decreasing of availability of good water, most of what we pump and use, we push into the Mississippi River eventually. And this is a great way to keep that water on the land, replenish the aquifer, and not just send it down the Mississippi. And I think this could happen in many other parts of the state as well.
Yeah, I don't know who wrote this bill, but this is great language. I love it.
Sorry, I did not.
I figured it wasn't you. But anyway.
But I thought you were nice.
Either for Mr. Bear or Mr. Kenny, maybe you don't know the answer to this, but do you know if this project qualifies for any Public Facilities Authority money, PFA? We call it PFA. Have you looked into anything like that?
Maybe
Senator Chamberlain, maybe you know.
Mr. Chair, we do have that as something to look at as well, but I'm not 100% clear on how that would work, but it was my initial understanding that this may not get into that general category, but it's something we're looking at as well.
Okay.
For other things.
I wonder if does this clean water come into this at all? Legacy?
Well, Mr. Chair, I was just looking at that. We do have a program on the statutes called Beneficial Use of Wastewater and Stormwater Capital Grants for Demonstration Projects. There has been some money that's gone through that in the past. I'm not seeing an appropriation last year from the Clean Water Fund, but I know in 2009 we had some money that was designated for some ethanol plants that were looking at using stormwater instead of groundwater. So I don't know that there's any money in there. It's a program run by the Pollution Control Agency. I don't know that there's any money in it right now, but we do have a program for it to pay 50% of the cost of a capital project.
Okay. Great. So we might have some options here. So,
Mr. Chair, what was the statute number?
Mr. Chair, Senator, it's 116.195. It was instituted in 2008. I think there was an LCCMR program that instituted that.
Okay. Yeah. Council just pointed out to me that PFA also makes loans. This is considered a grant. Is loan money something you would consider for this project? I guess you don't have to answer that now, but it's something to think about.
Mr. Chair, members, with the issue with water in the Northeast, the Metro, and the region, and several meetings and discussions with other senators, it is, Senator Wieger pointed out, it's a bipartisan effort here, was to look at and explore all options. And we have considered all options. And given the unique nature of this, and because of the water issue and aquifer issue, this was our first shot, okay. Our hope.
All right. Any other comments or questions? Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much. I appreciate it. We'll lay over Senate File 1712 for possible inclusion and recommendation to the bonding committee.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Dames.
We're getting there, girl.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senate File 1934.
Yes, Senate File 1934 is a bill for an act relating to capital investment, appropriating $500,000 for the Lacaparo Yellow Bank River District. And today I have two testifiers with me. I have Trudy Haystead, the Water District Administrator, and Carrie Netsky, the Area 2 Minnesota River Basins Projects Incorporated Executive Director. And to start with, I'll turn it over to Trudy to go through with an explanation of the request.
Okay, just state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senators. My name is Trudy Haystead. I'm administrator of the Lacaparo Yellow Bank Watershed District. Our district was established in 1971. The citizens petitioned to get a watershed district to help with the flooding issues in our area. On a handout I believe you have in front of you, there's a map that shows our watershed district. Our watershed encompasses 1,700 square miles. Of that, about 976 are in Minnesota. The other 736 square miles are in South Dakota. So about a third of our watershed's in South Dakota, which we don't have the jurisdiction on. A unique feature in our watershed district is the elevation change. In the first 60 miles of our watershed, the elevation drops more than 1,000 feet due to the Coteau Prairie, also known as the Buffalo Ridge. This creates quite a bit of challenges in crossover flooding issues. On the bottom of that handout is a picture that shows what happens. Water comes rapidly down the Coteau, and after the first 60 miles, it gets flat, and it just spreads out and does a lot of crossover flooding. We're looking at engineering study for a couple retention projects on the Lacaparo River. On the Lacaparo River, the elevation drop averages 78 feet per mile. If we can get these retention structures in, it would slow that water down, and then we can work on some water quality issues that we have. We have had some success with a couple projects to this nature, and I'll let Carrie Netsky describe those to you.
Good afternoon, Chairman and Senator members. Name is Carrie Netsky. I'm the Executive Director for Area 2 Minnesota River Basin Projects Incorporated, based out of Marshall. We are a 9-county joint powers board, and for 36 years we've been planning and engineering and constructing floodwater retentions primarily along the Buffalo Ridge with the flooding problems that we have. As Trudy had illustrated, that at least within the Lacaparo watershed, we'll have elevation drops up to 78 feet per mile. That's very different from what you hear in the Red River Valley, where they might have 2 or 3 feet per mile. So you can tell that our floodwaters, they come very fast, and they do a lot of damage. So before we can even address any of the water quality issues, we have to handle the quantity to keep the sediments on the ground and to keep our stream banks where they belong. I'd like to refer you to the back of the pamphlet, of the handout that was provided to you. This is one of the projects that some of the members here would remember. It was called Lazarus Creek, and it was actually funded with bonding funds back in 2003. Not only did the bonding pay for the construction of the project, but also the engineering. The nine counties that represent Area 2, we do provide engineering services and have a staff engineer. However, when you get to large-scale dam retentions like this, they require much more engineering and much more knowledge. Basically, you're hiring a large consulting firm to do so. And that's where we ask the state to step in and help. The project pictures you see here, the top picture was a before construction. Again, you can see the very typical topography of the Lacquer Pearl River. The second picture in the middle shows the dam embankment in place, and then the very bottom picture shows that project in action. The interesting thing is this project was built in 2005. In 2006, 7, and 10, it filled up that full just from the rapid snow melts that we get, much of it coming from South Dakota. Again, where there's no jurisdiction. But one interesting fact, that once that water hits that riser elevation, that pond will hold 640 million gallons of floodwaters. So you can imagine the benefits that are seen downstream. With that information, again, we're asking for assistance that we can provide engineering services for two other very similar projects. They would be very similar scope in that they would be dry dams and that they would basically just hold those floodwaters back during rapid snow melts or heavy rainfalls. With that, I would be open to any questions.
Can't we just build a wall between Minnesota and South Dakota? Any comments or questions from the committee? Senator Scoyne.
Well, you know, Mr. Chair, I remember the Lazarus Creek project, and I think we thought it wasn't going to make it, but then it was raised from the dead.
Yeah.
Several times, actually.
Mr. Chair, could we table set 1947?
I don't know. When you get biblical in here, it's pretty good, you know. What the heck? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Would, the couple of times that basin has filled up, in the instances of normal moisture from that point on, how long does it take to really empty that out again?
Who wants it?
Senator Weber, just from memory, I don't have the whole file with me, but it just seems from memory that it's a matter of 4 days, that from the time that it fills to the top, it'd be about 4 days, and it would be back down to empty level.
That's this one, right?
The bottom one, yes. That's within 4 feet of hitting that emergency.
So how long is that retention pond, for example?
That, I've got that with me. The dam is 67 feet tall, 700 feet long, and I believe it's 385 feet wide at its widest point.
Okay. All right. Hey, any other comments, questions? Seeing none, thank you, Senator Dames. Do you have any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We would appreciate your support.
Okay, then we'll lay over Senate File 1934 for possible inclusion in the recommendation to the Bonding Committee. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Senator Scoyne. Looks nothing like Lazarus.
No, this was Resurrection Nurseries.
You know, Mr. Chair, that Lazarus Creek project, I recall that there were many times when that was dead, but it did manage to make it through, and so hopefully my project, Senate File number 1947, doesn't have quite such a long path.
I was hoping you weren't laying the groundwork. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I am here with Senate File number 1947. It's a request for the native seed program that the DNR operates. And members, as we were having the debate about the state nursery program the last few years, one of the strengths of the program is the seed collection that is going on in northern Minnesota to ensure that the genetics of the trees that are being raised and planted are able and hardy to survive in the northern part of our state. And so they do a very good job of collecting cones and seeds and propagating those so that the seedlings that are planted are seeds from the area that the trees are going to be growing in. This is a request from the department to beef up the equipment that they use for this native seed processing. And I'm here with Mr. Olin Phelps from DNR, and he'll walk you through the specifics of the request.
Welcome. Just state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Olin Phillips, and I'm the section manager for the Forest Protection Section for the Division of Forestry, which has responsibility for our nursery and tree improvement program. As many of you may be aware, the department submitted a very similar preliminary bonding request to this bill to the governor's office for consideration, but it was not put forward by the governor in his bonding recommendations for 2014. This initiative that was a part of our preliminary bonding request was to support some of the actions that were identified in the nursery, State Forest Nursery and Tree Improvement Report, which was submitted to the legislature at their request from 2013. That report is online at the Minnesota DNR. I also have copies if you want to see it. It's a very lengthy report, but the report was focused on how to ensure long-term availability of ecologically appropriate and potentially diverse native forest seed and seedlings to support state conservation projects and initiatives to protect the genetic fitness and resilience of native forest ecosystems, and to support tree improvement research to address evolving pressures such as invasive species and climate change. The support for a seed facility was one of the options identified within the report that for investments that could help us to move along in this direction to meet some of these challenges that we're facing both from climate change and invasive species, as well as just the solid native reforestation of our lands. The report emphasizes that to meet these challenges, we need to have both a public-private cooperation and collaboration. And so the efforts you see here before to expand our seed processing facility and our tree improvement capabilities will not only support the state forest nursery, but it will also support the private nurseries that will be able to access these seed supplies, these improved seedlings, the improved genetics that would be provided by a facility such as this. Currently, the state forest nursery system has a sufficient seed production structure, though it's fairly ancient, as we talk about the hockey arenas. It's almost as ancient as them, but so we can provide our existing seed demands, but that's really as far as we can go within the restrictions we have of being self-supporting. This facility and this recommendation would bring support to an expanded seed processing facility that not only would increase our capacity, but increase our ability to explore a diversity of seed sources, even supplementing beyond trees and going into the forbs and some of the understory shrubs that are a part of our forest ecosystems that will also be impacted by these agents of change. So that'll provide us that expanded capacity, which that investment is something that would be supplemental to the self-supporting structure of our nursery seedling program. And that's why it was put forward as a bonding request. The request looks to help build a facility at the Bedour State Forest Nursery, and also then to establish tree improvement laboratory and greenhouse facilities at the former General Andrews Nursery, which we are in the process of restructuring for a long-term purpose as a seed orchard complex and a tree improvement center within the state. And we're doing that as funding allows us to do off the sale of our seedlings, which the margins, as many of you realize in past discussions, have grown very small on the amount of seedlings that are being utilized, and therefore the investment margins that we have for the facility.
Senator Scoy? No.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Phelps did mention that he does have copies of the report. If anybody would like them, we could hand it out, or if somebody wants it, to get a hold of me, and we'll get you a copy of it.
You mentioned two places, right, that you're going to put these? Is there, are they new?
Yes.
They're new. How many square feet would the $2 million, do you know, how big those places would be?
I did not bring that number with me, Mr. Chairman, but I could provide it.
Okay.
To you.
Senator Ingebrigts, did you just raise
your
hand?
No, I'm just stretching.
Right. I'm used to you raising your hand.
I know you are.
So I thought maybe it was you again. Okay. All right. Where is this on the DNR's priority list, just out of curiosity? Or don't they have one?
It was from the...
Well, Mr. Chair, it's on the top of my priority list.
That's good.
Not a good question.
Right. Senator Ingebrigts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I do have... I would like a copy of that report, if I could, please, Senator Squire.
Okay. All right. Well, number 15, anyway. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure where the priorities is, but it was part of a very limited package that we submitted to the governor's office.
There are a lot of misplaced priorities around here, so this might be in the wrong spot. Because it's at number 15, but it maybe should be higher. Okay, so. Okay, any other comments or questions? Okay, Senator Scoy, any last comments?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay, thank you very much. So we'll lay Senate File 1947 over for possible inclusion and recommendation to the Bonding Committee. Senator Ingebrigts, Senate File 1760.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Bring before you Senate File 1760. 1760 is a bonding request by the city of Parker's Prairie. I have two guests with me, along with some other guests that travel with them from Greater Minnesota, and they won't be testifying. However, we've got a couple of folks here that are very, very anxious to do that, have been for since noon when I told them that it would be about a 40-minute wait. Boy, you know, it's time for us to all know that we're back in session here and we don't do this in 15 minutes. So so I apologize to them right away. But
had you told me that, we could have moved them up.
No, that was fine. No, they wanted to stay back here and enjoy our roads around the complex here that they fell into this morning when they came here. But Mr. Chair and members, Parker's Prairie is a new area that I have after redistricting, which is just north of where I live, actually, so in Otter Tail County, and I have to tell you that in my driving around during the election process, and I also have land just north of Parker's Prairie, and I have had for about 20 years. Going back and forth over the years, I've noticed a lot of activity going on in this small town, and I've had to ask myself several times what's all the folks doing in the park alongside the road, and I finally came up and asked somebody that, and it was very clear that people were obviously coming from a long distance to enjoy the park there at Parker's Prairie, and I wondered what the attraction was. Well, again, I looked a little closer when I drove by, and there was an outdoor pool there, and so you can about imagine the amount of use that was going on there. But that's what it was. It was something that was pulling folks in from a long ways around and a long ways around the city of Parker's Prairie going back and forth. And when one of the testifiers called me not too long ago, they said, you know, it's time we have to do some replacing here in our park, and one of the projects is going to be the pool. And they've been running really, really after it since then. And I'm going to quit babbling here and let the testifiers tell you about just what exactly the project is about and the regional significance it does have for the small town of Parker's Prairie in that particular area. And I'll turn it over to Jim Arvidson from Parker's Prairie.
Babbling is permitted. It's not encouraged.
We don't do that here.
Thank you, Senator Bill. Mr. Chairman and committee members, so far, it's been an enjoyable day for us to be here. It's kind of fun to listen to all the different projects.
We can keep you here longer if you want.
Okay.
just say your name for the record, please.
James Arvidson.
Okay. Welcome.
As we near the end of what's been a pretty tough winter for most of us, I'd like to turn your thoughts to a hot summer day where children, grandchildren, and their families can come to an area to enjoy what will be an aquatic center. We'd like to think second to none. It's going to be a fun place, but it's also going to be a safe place and accessible to all ages and abilities. Parker's Prairie is a small, but we think very progressive community. We have chosen to be a leader in our region for things that we think will improve the quality of life, not only in our community, but throughout the region. While other communities struggle to maintain their identity and sustainability, we have chosen to move forward. A few years ago, we took on the challenge of building an event center. It was a dream of our Lions Club at the time, but the idea caught on, and it took 10 years, but it caught on, and we now have a facility that is excellent for receptions, business meetings, etc. And 2 years ago, a hotel was added to it, so we have a complete facility now for that. 37 years ago, we also took on the challenge of building the original swimming pool. That, too, was a dream and took a lot of hard work, and a lot of the labor was done by community members, and it turned out to be a tremendous and valuable asset for our community. But with age, that pool has now fallen in disrepair, as well as doesn't meet safety standards and accessibility requirements. Our goal is to replace that pool, hopefully within the next year. We are able to use the pool this coming year, but we aren't sure if it'll keep going for the whole year or not. So we have been working to raise funds and see if we can make this happen, and we've been quite successful so far. We want to not only be at the forefront of preserving, but we also want to improve our quality of lifestyle for a rural area. This aquatic center will offer 14,000 to 15,000 area kids, and like I said, grandkids and their families, time together. For communities, in fact, over 20 communities within our region, it will be a great place to come on a hot day. A major aim of this project, this facility, is to be more than just a pool. Instead, creating a community center that builds quality of life in the region. The facility will offer classes and open swim times, water play elements, and facilities to ensure patrons are able to stay as long as they wish. Classes and camps will include swim lessons, water aerobics, snorkeling, scuba diving, and a lifeguarding camp. Now, to take on a project of this magnitude, we have partnered with what's called West Central Initiative, which is in West Central Minnesota and is based out of Fergus Falls. They have provided a 501c3 status for us, as well as technical help and advice from time to time. I will refer to it as WCI. So the WCI, Parker's Prairie Swimming Pool Fund, proposes to replace the failing Parker's Prairie Pool with a modern aquatic facility to appeal to the region's needs. The facility will include a green filtering system, require fewer pumps than the current pool, and will meet all government regulations for the pool area and bathhouses. A zero-entry pool, which means that there is no step at all, it's just a gradual entry into the pool, will adjoin the larger pool. The smaller pool will replace the existing waiting pool and will include water play elements in the layout. The larger pool will accommodate a diving board as well as an aquatic climbing wall and slide. Census data from 2010 shows that in Otter Tail County, where Parker's Prairie is located, the percentage of people living beneath the poverty level was 13.4%. and 16.7% for families. Of people under the age of 18, 19.2% lived in poverty. WCI PPSPF aims to address these economic circumstances by offering a community aquatic center that serves people of all ages, races, and socioeconomic backgrounds. We also hope that it will improve the economic ability of in the entire region, providing some jobs as well as technical and engineering help from whoever builds the pool for us. We also intend to be innovative in our approach by utilizing solar thermal water heating to minimize our cost of operation and help our environment. And as I said before, the center will be open to all ages and abilities. By keeping a modern, up-to-date swimming facility in our city park, we will continue to provide a safe and healthy environment for the quality of life necessary for our region of central Minnesota to thrive. Cheryl, you have anything to add to that?
Cheryl Myers, co-chair.
Welcome, Cheryl.
I was on the first committee that built the first pool back in 1977, and we did it all with private funds. There was no tax monies involved. At that time, it was approximately, with the materials and labor that were included by local businessmen, it was probably around $75,000 if you included the prices at that time. This pool will meet all the standards required by the state and federal government. And the best part about it is that there is a letter, an email that we received from our local director of the PAI regarding her clients, and I'd like you to just take note of that, how excited she was that now people who are in or of any age who are in wheelchairs will be able to enter this pool. Originally, the pool was a junior Olympic size, and now it will actually be two pools that are going to be connected. The first pool will be a zero entry that will accommodate toddlers and younger families, and that will go to 3 feet deep. And at that point, they can take wheelchairs in and that, and if they want to go in the deeper, there will be a connecting aisle between the two pools, so they'll be able to just walk through that ramp and go into the 3.5 foot to the 11 foot, which will accommodate diving boards and slides and possibly a climbing wall. We did a survey of our students from grade 6 through juniors in high school just to find out what they knew about the pool. They were well aware that the pool is in disrepair, but they love it. It's a place they can go. The one big thing that we found with this pool has been a flagship for our community. Younger families have moved in because they think, this place likes families and children. And on top of having a wonderful school system, we've really attracted a lot of younger families. And this is definitely a bigger price tag than what we had before. The community is totally behind us. The city council has, when they were addressing problems that they had been made aware of with inspections, they came to the conclusion they did not want to lose the pool. And so as a pool committee, we then incorporated and partnered with WCI and with private donations without even going out on the street and asking for any, we had over $7,000 that just came in. Our first donation of $300 came as far away from Massachusetts from a former citizen who wrote a note and said, I never had a pool when I was a child there, but I certainly would have loved to. And with that money, then we offered a grant to the city to have U.S. Aquatics give them a consultation, which they did, and the plans were drawn up and to replace the pool. And the city made a choice on the design that would include the two connecting pools and pumps. And, of course, the best part about it is it's a green filtering system. So they will use a moss from northern Minnesota in that. And then Jim said we have been researching solar power, and we're hoping to include that in the infrastructure so that at some point in time, when we have the money, we will try and incorporate that, and that could save us up to 1,500 gallons of propane in summer season.
Total cost for our project projected is $1.8 million.
We have a very nice solar manufacturing plant up on the Iron Range. It makes Minnesota made panels. Yeah.
So you want to send me that name, please?
Yeah. I will. There's probably incentives in law for you to use them, too. So any questions from the committee? This looks like a wonderful project. With this level of giving thing here, the Olympic naming rights.
You like that, huh?
Yes, I love it. So do we get that if we give you the $250,000?
Sure, absolutely.
We'll guarantee that.
Mr. Chair, I suppose it's going to be Ingebrigtsen.
Yeah. No. It would be Thomasoni. But in finishing up here, every little town has a flagship, and this is Parker's Prairie. I mean, it really is when you talk about that, and this is the attraction, and it's been there for many, many, many years, and it keeps the town going. And rural Minnesota, as you know, we're subjected to those things, and we don't have the tax base, and we need a little help now and then. So I appreciate the consideration of the chair and the committee.
Well, you know, Senator Ingrid,
thank you.
You're being a little shy, I think, because they got a $2 million project, and you're only asking for $250,000. You know,
we will entertain more.
All right, thank you.
I'm
going to
bring
much.
Jim along with me from now on. Right?
Thank you. We'll lay over Senate File 1760 for
thank
possible
you,
inclusion
Chair.
And recommendation.
Thank you for this
committee.
Opportunity.
Thank you for showing up. We appreciate it, Senator Rood. Senate File 1710.
Mr. Chair and members, I know why you put us on this part of the agenda, because we just have such an exciting project here to tell you about today. So
keep the best for last.
This is Senate File 1710, and we bring you this project with travel and adventure and jobs and a little bit of Smokey the Bear and fire suppression and, of course, sewers.
And Senator Rue, just so your witnesses know, this... Just because nobody's here doesn't mean we're not interested. It's all about people's schedules and other things happening at exactly the same time. We've run over our committee time, but we're gonna listen to these bills.
Thank
anyway
you. They have traveled a long way.
Yes, and so we'll take some extra time here. So go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so today I bring you a little sense of urgency with this project too, because we have things happening with our sewer system that we need to address rather quickly. So today with me I have Jeff Wigg from the Brainerd Airport. He's the Brainerd Airport Manager, and Matt Killian, the CEO of the Brainerd Lakes Chamber, and I will turn it over to them.
Okay. Go ahead and just say your name for the record.
Jeff Wigg, Airport Manager, Brainerd Lakes Regional Airport. Mr. Chairman, Senator Rood, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. Brainerd Lakes Regional Airport is an increasingly important state service center and economic development hub for central Minnesota. We're one of three airports in the state with two runways of over 6,500 feet in length capable of landing medium to medium heavy jets. The other two are Rochester and Minneapolis. In addition to scheduled Delta Airlines flights, our airport is home to 84 aircraft of various sizes and 12-plus businesses and organizations who maintain a base with us and help provide the 50-plus jobs on the field. Some of these organizations include a 70-member Civil Air Patrol squadron that supports search and rescue throughout the state, and Minnesota Highway Patrol and DNR aviation bases that together have six aircraft based on the field. We also have a major DNR air tanker base that provides fire suppression for the southern two-thirds of the state, and North Memorial Air Care has their only outstate helicopter maintenance base on our field, as well as two critical care transport helicopters. Brainerd Lakes Regional Airport was also fortunate to construct a $7.4 million new airline terminal building that was finished about 2 years ago. The terminal was largely funded by a federal grant that provided scores of quality construction jobs to firms across the state during the recent economic downturn. The new building's fire suppression system is presently supplied with water from a pre-existing well. However, the state fire marshal has stipulated that we connect our fire suppression system to the city of Brainerd's water system by April of 2016 or construct an expensive, limited-use alternative water system. At present, the nearest city water and sewer is approximately 2.5 miles away. Bringing the city's sewer and water connection would alleviate numerous issues the airport faces with a patchwork of 9 different wells, septic systems, and holding tanks on the field. The drain field serving the main terminal is failing, and we are band-aiding the system with the help of an emergency grant from MnDOT Aeronautics. And North Memorial Air Care's septic system is frozen out in recent years, forcing temporary shutdowns of the base where the flight crews and nurses live for 24 hours on a shift. Connecting the entire airport to the city septic system would alleviate these maintenance and freeze-out concerns, prevent potential environmental problems, and would eliminate the need to continually dig and expand drain fields. In fact, on the way down at about Big Lake, my cell phone started to ring, and I took 3 calls from staff people and a contractor about the temporary fixes that we're doing on the drain field now. So we know it's an ongoing issue. Connecting Brainerd City sewer and water to the airport will actually require 2 different projects. First is the primary project, construction of 2.5 miles of 16-inch water main and 12-inch sanitary sewer main from the southern tip of Rice Lake in East Brainerd along State Highway 210 through land located both in the city and outside the city within Crow Wing County. And there are maps of this area on pages 4 and 5 of the PowerPoint in your packet. And yes, that was me that put the copious amounts of exhibits in your packet. For that, I apologize. The newly constructed lines would terminate near the airport property line, and in order to accommodate the extra flow required by the airport and the expected new development along Highway 210, the project also includes upgrades to the sewer and water infrastructure in East Brainerd. Total cost of this project is estimated at $7.1 million, and this is the project for which state bonding funds are requested. The second project is to build a robust connection to the city water and sewer lines inside of the airport. This project would require over 3/4 mile of lines to reach the main terminal complex and would be designed to allow existing and future tenants to easily link in. Our engineers have estimated the cost of this build-out at $1.1 million, which would likely be paid from Federal Aviation Administration Airport Improvement Plan funds, as well as Brainerd Lakes Regional Airport capital improvement dollars. The airport's capital improvement dollars come from many years of accumulated City of Brainerd and Crow Wing County contributions to the airport. So in summary, by approving this bipartisan bonding request, the state would be enabling construction work of nearly $8.5 million to proceed. Thank you for considering my testimony, and with the Chair's permission, I'll now turn it over to Matt Killian to discuss the significant other benefits of the project.
Mr. Killian.
Thank you again, Matt Killian, CEO of the Brainerd Lakes Chamber. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Rood, for your support of this project. It's true that we did spend a lot of time in the car driving down, but it was 50 degrees, and so that made it a little bit more bearable for us, and we're looking forward to getting back outside.
Probably had the windows wide open.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're up in Brainerd. It feels like tropical to us.
What are we doing in
here? Isn't that the truth?
Of course, the Brainerd Lakes Chamber is really not interested in the project because we want the water fountains to taste better, the toilets to flush a little faster. We're interested in it from a business and economic development opportunity. You know, of course, tourism is an economic driver for the Brainerd Lakes area. And just to give you a sense, we consider the lakes area to be about 25-mile radius around Brainerd. So that's going to include celebrated cities like Nisswa and Pequot Lakes and Cross Lake and all those towns where the metro comes up and vacations. As you drive north, the first thing that you see as you come into the community is a big statue of Paul Bunyan, who's sitting on a log chair waving to you. And it's a great front door to the lakes area for tourists. But for businesses, the front door often is the regional airport. In fact, some of our largest and most vital companies use the airport regularly. We have 4 large companies that comprise the bulk of the business traffic, and they're in Brainerd, Crosby, Pequot Lakes, in Staples, so you can get a sense of the regionalism that this airport attracts and represents. As far as airport development, really the name of the game for us is creating jobs and eliminating barriers. If we were able to obtain city water and sewer service, we see economic development potential at the airport itself. Jeff had mentioned there are about 10 or 12 current businesses on the airport site. There's a national helicopter service firm. There's an environmental research company. There's about 50 jobs up there. That's not too bad for a greater Minnesota facility. But we feel like we're positioned to attract more of that development in the future. The cost to install a sprinkler system out there, a pump and tank sprinkler system for an airport located facility, can be as high as $400,000. That's with the facilities as they currently exist. That tends to stop the conversations before they even start when it comes to development. The other thing that it does is in Highway 210, this 2-mile corridor, it really opens up some possibilities there. And we feel like this isn't a dream or projection. It's not one of those things where we feel like if you build it, it'll come. We're already seeing activity in that area. We were recently contacted by a tire retreading company that's looking to expand operations, double their capacity, and create 22 new jobs. They don't have very much need for water except for restrooms and wash, but the cost to hook up to the existing lines is about $250,000. That's cost prohibitive for this company. They're considering either expanding in Brainerd or Menominee, Wisconsin, and honestly we're worried about losing them to our good friends across the border. So this is a barrier to economic development. And then finally, environmental benefits. This will allow lake homes along that corridor those non-conforming septic systems to hook up to public sewer. That protects the Mississippi River waterway. That's just an ancillary benefit. It protects the Mississippi River waterway and a local trout stream. And, you know, we're always looking for a fishing angle. So if you want a fishing angle for the Brainerd Lakes area, there you have one. So in summary, I just ask this. When you consider that the airport is the Minnesota's fourth largest, that's a regional magnet for business and tourism. It attracts between 15,000 and 20,000 passengers. It's in that ideal location that positions this corridor for future economic development. What I'd ask is, it doesn't make any sense for a facility of this regional importance to be on well water and septic systems. It just doesn't. We think about that as a cabin. Not a regional airport of statewide significance. So I'd like to just extend the support of the business community up in the Lakes area to please include this project in the 2014 bonding bill, if at all possible.
Thanks. Okay. And of the $7.1 million, that's the whole project, right? There's not a local match to that, right?
Not for that portion. The local dollars would be spent inside the airport property of airport, city, and county dollars.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was going to ask a comparable question. It seems to me that the 2 miles along 210, I guess it is, certainly would be able to contribute through some kind of assessment mechanism, because there will be individuals and businesses that are going to utilize this. And then how much is the county and the city contributing to the overall project?
Who wants that? Do you know the answer to that?
I could take that. The land through which the sewer and water line would be going is presently not developed. It's developed very lightly. There are plans for future development there, both commercial and residential, but right now there are very few structures along that route because the airport's located outside the city limits. The city and county have been contributing to the airport's capital bonding fund every year, the airport's capital improvement fund every year, and those are the dollars that we would be using for local infrastructure.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, there it is a very limited commercial properties along that corridor, because it goes kind of on the edge of the Brainerd city limits on out, and so there would be very little opportunity to assess a business on that corridor.
Senator Scoy.
Well, Mr. Chair, and and to the Senator Rood and everybody. But if it's all, it, that seems to me that there's a great opportunity for growth because it's not developed now, and you will put the investment in the infrastructure in there and would be an opportunity for people. Anyway,
that's the idea, isn't it? Yeah, so the tax chair is just thinking ahead. That's all.
I'd add that if we could sell sponsorships or naming rights, we'd certainly look into that. But there's nobody that wants to put their name on 1 foot of sewer line. So,
well, you never know.
Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, most of these type of infrastructure would go in and be paid for through the assessment on the properties that are the water line is going through. I mean, that's the traditional mechanism that would be used, and there's 2 miles of frontage here that could be assessed. I mean, I know it's not developed now, but...
And normally there's some kind of a match required for something like this also. So, but anyway, does anybody else have any questions or comments? So what we'll do is we'll lay this over for possible inclusion and recommendation to the bonding committee, and thank you all for coming, and I appreciate the presentation, and we'll see what we can do. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Weber, you missed my last but least comment when Senator Rood went up there, so last but not least. Save the best for last. What did I say to you?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And thank you for your patience.
Pleased to be here today to talk about Senate File 1906. And as you may recall, last year I was here with a similar bill. Actually, the Biotech Center in Worthington had been built, and they had been efficient and actually had not used all the appropriated money. We came back for reauthorization of that last year. We did not achieve that. Therefore, that money has went back into the general fund, and therefore we are in front of you again today to make a new request. And this has been an important center into the city of Worthington, and as they attempt to enlarge upon and grow the biotech industry in Worthington. And I have with me today City Administrator Craig Clark, who would like to speak to you about that project.
Mr. Clark, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Craig Clark, Administrator, City of Worthington. The city is asking the state's help in completing the project that we started in 2005. The state provided $2.5 million for the infrastructure build-out of the Bioscience Industrial Park. This complements about a decade-long process that the city's embarked upon for animal biosciences, a strength of our local community, and building upon that. From that time, we've established the Biotechnology Advancement Center. This is a business incubator that brings together our agricultural bioscience firms, our local high school and the science club, Minnesota West Community and Technical College, local producer groups, University of Minnesota and University of Minnesota Mankato, and even South Dakota State University in a cooperative effort to provide a business incubator. We have a business that's located in the incubator at this time and already expressing interest to move out into the industrial park that's surrounding the Biotechnology Advancement Center. Included in your packet is the layout. What we're hoping to do, and the last component of our facility, is the build-out of a lab facilities that will combine the business development incubator, but also have the collaboration with the school to provide applied lab technicians, so that supplies our bioscience firms and also has jobs for local folks in our community. The state also provided $1.3 million in FY 2009 for that Biotechnology Advancement Center, as well as a federal grant and city contribution. So the last component is that lab build out to, and you can see the pictures in your packet, that basically right now is just a shell for the lab. Got representative samples of the what the lab spaces will look like, and we can bring those together and complete the vision that we embarked upon with the state and create jobs in greater Minnesota and keep our communities vibrant and strong.
Sir, would you like to say something?
Abraham Algari, I'm the director of Worthington Regional Economic Development.
And would you like to add anything to that?
The only thing I would like to add is basically, like Craig said, we would like to put this laboratory space to practical use. We get questions a lot of times from the research institutions and also the national and, by the way, multinational companies in Worthington that would like to utilize it.
So this is an addition to the biotech center that's already there? Is that what this is, or just remodeling of it?
Senator, that the shell is already built out within the Biotechnology Advancement Center, so we would just finish out the shell portion that it was part of the original vision of the facility.
And, Senator Weber, how did this happen? They didn't spend all the money. What was that all about?
That is correct. The original appropriation, they were economical and didn't spend all the money. And unfortunately, the state has rules, you know, if you don't use it, you lose it. And as a result, they were not able to keep that money.
Was that less than 4 years ago?
Mr. Chairman, the amount was $2.5 million that was appropriated and in 2013 reverted back to the general fund. The lab facilities were not an eligible expense designated in the original language. So that's what we came back to fix. And then
did Weber do that?
No.
No.
No. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was prior to my time.
Okay. Well, because it seems we should have been able to re-up that.
But yeah, we were essentially hoping to recapture what was already obligated, but didn't meet that deadline.
Mr. Chairman, members, we had this provision in the bonding bill last session, but the larger bill did not pass.
Oh, we were re-upping it then last year. Okay, so and was it the $2.5 million we were re-upping, or?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it'd be the $398.
$398. Okay. All right. Okay. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Anything further here?
No, we appreciate your support.
I don't believe so. We appreciate your support. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for being so patient and waiting for us through the whole committee. Weber's name starts with W, so you end up, you know, it's been happening your whole life, I bet.
Mr. Chairman, we could start at the inverse order next time, right?
Yeah, maybe we will. Senator Rood.
Mr. Chair, and I just had on the last presentation, I just had a clarification on the question that you asked. The reason most of the project is outside of the Brainerd city limits, and so therefore they cannot assess. They don't have that ability to assess, and that's the reason why. And so that was a clarification. So, it was a good question.
So I'm thinking we should adopt some Senate rules for legislators who stay for the entire committee meeting. There should be some kind of reward, don't you think?
Is he like a recoil?
Thank you, everybody. Meeting adjourned.
Abraham?
I really...
You're going to kick save.
Complex. Every time they throw us...